Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, it's funny, when I used to listen to talk shows, you know, ever since high school, I was one of those, probably the only person I know that's like a high school talk show junkie. And this is back in Boston, and there were just amazing folks, Jerry Williams and some of the other great talk show hosts come to mind, and the morning hosts, you know, like Carl D'Souza, people most of you have never even heard of. But anyway, it's fascinating, you know, listening to them. And every once in a while, well, actually fairly often, they would use the phrase slow news day. Well, it's a slow news day, so we don't have a whole lot to talk about. And then they proceed about, you know, talking about anything they could because, you know, they had a show to do. And it was fascinating to listen to them. And I've seen myself, gee, I wonder, you know, I'm thinking in high school, you know, when I get to be a talk show host, will I ever have to, you know, be stuck with like a lack of news? Well, apparently there's no lack of news. There's no lack of news any day. I've never seen so much news. There is so much news out there that it's crazy. And the biggest problem is to decide what not to, you know, getting stuff that you don't want to report. Again, we talked about this yesterday, that everybody else is reporting. And so this is Tuesday, chock-filled Tuesday. We've got Jean Vernick, who's going to start with her story of the week or stories of the week. I never really know. This is the fun of this. It's like, come on the show. Tell me what you want to talk about. But I titled the show today, just before I get to Jean, We Have Met the Enemy and He Is Us. And I wasn't quite sure what to title the show because it's sort of generally, you know, we're screwed. Okay, so how am I, what am I going to do? And this expression came to me that had been around for actually quite a while. There was a comic strip back, like decades ago, but like early to mid, you know, maybe even late 1900s, called Pogo. And Pogo had there was a famous quote taken from one of the Pogo tunes, "We have met the enemy and he is us." And so that's, you sort of look at that. And I found this article, and it's from the Ohio State University. I guess it's number 36 on their most famous quotes. And it says, Walt Kelly's funny animal comic strip Pogo, it's kind of like a Winnie the Pooh for political types. Okay, right. Walt Kelly's funny animal comic strip Pogo provided a surprising but effective setting for incisive political satire. So a lot of times people have had to hide this stuff. Like if you ever heard of the Gilbert and Sullivan operettas out of England, I performed them, you know, a couple of them when I was in junior high. They did all the things. They made total fun of the British monarchy, which normally would get them, you know, executed. but if you hide it, you make it funny, then it's okay. And so a lot of times political stuff has to be coded, you know, especially all the drug references in songs in the 60s. You know, I just found out that A Horse with No Name was actually about heroin instead of a horse, you know, wandering through the desert, shattering my illusions. Anyway, so the article says, during the War of 1812, the United States Navy defeated the British Navy in the Battle of Lake Erie. Master Commandant Oliver Perry wrote to Major General William Henry Harrison, who I'm sure went on to be president, "We have met the enemy and they are ours." Kelly's parody of this famous battle report perfectly summarizes mankind's tendency to create our own problems. In this case, we have only ourselves to blame for the pollution and destruction of our environment. And that's where they're going with that. But when you think about it, what we've got now, you know, as our military races to battle foreign nations to make sure they don't become what we've become, we forget that the real enemy is right here, that the fight for freedom is right here, that everything we need to do to fix our country is right here, that the problems of a government picking its own government, which is really the essence of the Biden insurrection, the coup d'etat, and the resulting problems from supply chain to energy to millions of invaders, you know, flooding our country. That's all brought about by government, you know, by government, for government. It's almost like a self-perpetuating marketing program, much like, you know, COVID and vaccines. You create COVID, then you create the vaccines. You sell the vaccines as long as you can keep creating COVID. Now, COVID cases are down, so they're going to have to boost them back up again to keep selling the product, vaccines. Same thing here. You know, the government perpetuates government by creating more government, by creating problems that require government. It's a self-perpetuating, never-ending cycle of destruction brought about by the very people who want to destroy us, and they, in fact, are the enemy. So the enemy is us within us, and we need to do something about it. And so I wrote something real quickly last night Where did I put Jean's? I'm looking for Jean's intro. now I've lost it. This is really embarrassing. I made something last week for Jean intro to her show here, and now I've completely lost my train of thought. This is what happens when I multitask. Jean, I need you. Hang on. I know it's here. I, so no, that's not it. Where did I put it? This is what happens sometimes when you make things. And I need some kind of a. I know it's here. Did I move it? Where's Jean's report? Huh? I can't believe this is. She's laughing at me. She's laughing right now in the air. This is live radio. This is what happens when you try to do something, and it's completely. It was here. I know it was here. Did I? Found it. Be right back. When all is falling apart around you, when people are looking to you for answers you don't have, when you need a calm, reassuring voice to settle your fragile nerves, well, you've come to the right place. The always serene and tranquil, reasoned and measured, stable and sedate Jean Vernig, producer of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature, takes a few minutes each week at this time to reflect on her favorite phrase, "Are you kidding me?" And now, Jean Vernig. Yeah, you better take over. I was rambling.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about what we talked about off the air yesterday, because I would like your take on it, and I would like people to call in, because, as you know, I know nothing about guns other than what I've learned here so far, but I still don't understand them. But the thing is, with the, as probably everybody can guess where I'm going, is where out in New Mexico, where the cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, got shot and killed by Alec Baldwin, who pointed a gun he did it directly at him, but when he pulled the trigger, he was facing her and the director. And the thing is, I think he was told, what was it, that it was a cold gun, and I know, based on what I've heard, cold guns can mean many different things. But what I don't understand is they have laws, rules, whatever, and people are supposed to check the gun before they use it, besides the actor. And you would think he would have some responsibility in checking it too. And the thing is, I don't know if there were real bullets, because this is what I didn't know. I didn't know that the blanks could kill someone too. And so I don't know if it was a real bullet or a blank, but I just think it's a tragedy. And it's ironic, too, because, you know, Alec is so outspoken, opinionated in certain things. He's very against guns. And I don't know if it was the NRA or I think it was, came some of the people from there talking about, you know, I mean, because he's made it well known in the past that, you know, not for guns should be banned and all this stuff. And ironic that he's the one that kills someone with a gun. And not, as I said, not that, you know, he did it on purpose, but just a whole tragedy all around. And so it's like, then after that whole fact, there's a whole lot of conspiracy theorists. There are theories going on. And interesting, there's two groups of people, and one group thinks that, you know, right away everybody has to point blame, and it's the prop master's fault. Then it was just a freak accident. But it all boils down to that group of people do not think it was Baldwin's fault. And not that you could say, well, it was his fault, but ultimately he pulled the trigger. He's the one that made the decision to point to someone. I mean, even if it was just in jest. And then I think, well, yeah, maybe he would be doing that because of all the kids he has. And, you know, they just play around with guns and whatever. I don't know. Who knows? He only knows. But the thing is, it's just very, very sad. And so, I don't know. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future. And I know in the past people got killed, actors, actresses, whoever, that were working on sets, and, you know, there was bullets in the gun. But it's like people do make mistakes. And I'm not just talking him, but it's interesting that it's like if there's a whole lineage of things that are supposed to go on, it's like, how interesting that everything happened to lead up to what happened. And it may have just taken just one person out of that, those steps of that process that they're supposed to go through, that they would have caught it, we may not have, they may not be where they're in the situation they're in today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This,
you're a gun enthusiast. I mean, I'm sure you don't point guns at people just to point guns, just for fun. You know, I mean,
well, I mean, they violated every rule of gun safety you can think of. In fact, I'm sure I'll talk to Jim, probably Derek too, and Chappie about this on Friday. We've got we actually have three veterans on the show Friday, and we have two gun reports. We have Chappie's, gun tech, and Jim Dyke's Second Amendment report. Jim's from Florida Carry. And so we're all screaming, you know, all of us that, believe in the Second Amendment, to have liberals, you know, who have no idea what they're doing, complain about something they know nothing about, not follow the most basic procedures that we've tried, you know, to tell everybody over and over and over and over again of all the things that you don't do. This is a completely preventable tragedy. And so there's a couple of points I want to make on this. Let's just start with the basic rules of gun safety. You never, 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 never point a gun at anybody or anything you're not willing to destroy or kill. You just don't. You know, that's the first rule. You don't point guns at things, all right? You know, the second rule is all guns are loaded, all right? All guns are always loaded, okay? So you never think of a gun as unloaded. If you never think of a gun as unloaded, and someone, if I handed you a gun and said, this gun is loaded, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to check it. So wait a minute, you know, but if I hand you a gun and said, this gun is unloaded, you know, someone might go, okay, fine. Well, you can't trust that. Because all guns are loaded. You know, I worked in a gun store, one of my part-time jobs way back when, and people would bring in guns for sale or for maintenance or things like that, and they'd say, yeah, it's unloaded. I said, really? Let me take a look. Two full magazines, a fully loaded magazine in the gun and around in the chamber. I'm thinking to myself, you idiots? Yeah, but I always checked, so I didn't worry about it, because to me, all guns are always loaded, okay? You know, and right. So anybody I've talked to, friends, family, anybody, you know, I taught my daughter how to shoot. And number one rule, all guns are always loaded, you know. And so when you think of that, that's your first rule. Second thing is you don't point it. And the third rule is you don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to fire. You know, so these are the basics. And you can go to the NRA and find this. You can go to any gun group. You can talk to anybody who's responsible. You know, all guns are loaded. You know, you don't point the gun until you're ready to fire, and don't put your finger on the trigger until then. Those are just the basics. But probably the most important is all guns are loaded. You know, always consider them loaded. And of course, for kids, you know, if you see, you know, see a kid with a gun or someone with a gun, you know, run away, get an adult. Okay. But the thing is, you leave. You don't try and fix the situation as a kid. So we need to teach kids gun safety too. And I would have it required in high schools. You know, I'm not sure how exactly, or at least, you know, parents be highly encouraged to teach their kids, you know, about gun safety, just like you teach them to drive safely and all the other things you try and teach them to do. As far as movie sets, movies are different. Now, movies use what they call blanks. Now, a blank has everything that a regular round or a cartridge has, except the bullet. So what they do is they have the case, they have the primer to ignite the powder. They may have reduced charges, I don't know, but they have gunpowder in those cases. Now, what they do, instead of putting a bullet at the end that will be fired, is they kind of crimp them over. And so they'll take the end and kind of, you know, crimp it, squish it down. So what's actually being fired is the powder only. And I don't know if they have like a wax coating or some kind of cotton thing or something in there as well to either hold the powder or keep the powder level, because they don't use a large charge, right? It's just, you're not firing a bullet. You're just kind of opening up the end of the brass case. And so it sounds real. It looks real. You still get a flash of burning gunpowder, but what you don't have is a bullet being fired out. Nonetheless, that can still be fatal if you're close enough, because you've still got the impact of something. And like I said, I don't know how we can look up, in fact, that might be the thing to look up, you know, look up the contents of a blank, and we can do that and see if there's some kind of wadding.
They said there's some type of plastic, paper or plastic seal that
right.
So you get the sound of a real gun, and they can,
yeah.
But yeah, they can still be lethal.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that. I mean, as I said, I don't know much about guns.
Yeah.
But
so
like,
a blank's not really
a
blank. Yeah.
Right, right. But
so, but you never, you know, it's just like, you know, when you do fights in the movies, they don't actually hit each other. They fake it, okay? When
right.
you do gunshots, you know, camera angles, you don't have to actually point a gun at anybody to fire it. In fact, I think Brandon Lee, if I remember, and it just popped into my head, Brandon Lee, Bruce Lee's son, I think he was killed on a movie set with a loaded gun. We can check that out real quickly, too. But this should never happen. First of all, I should never have live rounds anywhere near a movie set. But here's the irony of this. Hollywood hates guns, loves them in the movies, have them themselves because they're the elite. You know, the Hollywood producers and actors, they all have carry permits in California, yet nobody else does. So the hypocrisy and the irony of this, but they're not, they don't practice, you know, the basic gun safety rules because, you know, they're liberals. They're above it. They don't need the rules. Rules don't apply to them, right? And so you combine that attitude with Alec Baldwin, you know, who I've never liked as an actor. Okay, it was okay in Hunt for Red October. But he always looks to me slimy as hell. So Alec Baldwin disgusts me just as a general human being. I heard the tapes of him screaming at his daughter and insulting and swearing at her and all those things that you know, no decent father would do, right? So all this is going on. But just the basics. Now, the other thing I heard was that the armorer, the person on the set responsible for the guns, is the daughter of a famous Hollywood armorer, prop master, gun aficionado, who I guess wanted his daughter in the biz. Well, you can't guarantee that your kids are going to follow you. That's one of, you know, parent rule number one. Your kids don't have to pick your profession. You know, we're not medieval England. We're not a trade society. We're not, you know, that's not how it works. And apparently she's not very good. And so, but she's got the job because, you know, daddy got her a job somehow. So the problem is the armorer too. So there should not be live rounds on the set. You should know the live rounds from the blanks. All actors should go through a gun safety blank course. And you never, even as part of the movie scene, you would never point a gun and fire at somebody. You'd always have it a few degrees away from them. It may look like you're pointing at them with camera angles, but you would never actually point one. And you have to make sure that nothing's in the background either. So I'm not sure what the lethal range of these things is. It's probably in the neighborhood of 6 feet, maybe. I mean, it's not a big range because these paper wadding things slow down very fast once they hit the air. But within a certain range, they're lethal. And so that's something you have to consider. The other thing that you mentioned, which is really interesting, is, you know, if anything along the way had broken this chain, and anybody that studies, well, I used to study airplane accidents because I was a flight instructor. And the one thing that comes up over and over again, those that have studied risk management for this kind of stuff, they have what they call the seven events, the chain of events leading to any disaster. So you look at an airplane crash, you look at a train crash, you look at a ship sinking, you look at a highway, you know, collapsing, a bridge collapsing, you look at anything that any disaster, and they're rare, fortunately, which is really good. But you look at any one, and it usually comes up to around seven bad decisions in a row, and it takes that many, which is good. It's good that it takes that. But seven bad decisions really make for a disaster or a tragedy. And so if any of those had interrupted the chain of events, like you said earlier, any one of those events would have stopped it. So if anywhere along the way someone had checked the bullets or he had pointed the gun away from, what's her name here? Catherine? No, Helena. Helena Hutchins, okay. You know, if anything, if the gun had been, you know, if the armorer were doing her job, you know, if Alec Baldwin were doing his job, you know, and checking, I mean, every actor who handles guns should be a gun aficionado. They should practice gun safety. You know, don't be a Hollywood elite. Don't be an arrogant, you know, so-and-so that just, they would just take the gun. It's still a gun. I mean, Hollywood uses real guns because they want realism. Well, the problem is real guns can still fire real bullets. You have to load blanks into them. They should all know what blanks are. They should all know what the lethal range of a blank is. I'm sure there are different types of blanks. There are blanks for machine guns, you know, that we can't own, of course, unfortunately. There are blanks for, you know, rifles. There are blanks for shotguns. There are blanks for handguns. There are blanks for big handguns. There are blanks for small handguns, you know, the caliber that the gun is in. Each one of them is going to have a different lethality and a different, level of danger. But just the basics. So let's start with the gun itself, okay? It'd be nice if Hollywood guns could only be loaded with blanks. That would be a good thing. I'm not sure how you do that, but you know, if you block the barrel probably blow up in people's faces if they put a live round in it. So that's not a good idea.
Brandon Lee did die from a blank gun.
Oh, it was a blank gun. It was a blank.
It was a blank gun.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
But the thing is, with as good as Hollywood is with shooting, not shooting from the gun, but I mean filming. The thing is, you would think that, like you said before, if the angle of the gun, they can make it look real even if they're pointing towards a wall, not hard, or something, you know, other than people. And they weren't filming at the time. So the way it sounds, he was just joking around.
Yeah, you don't joke around with guns.
that's another
rule.
The next thing besides always assume a gun is loaded and don't shoot or don't aim at someone unless you want to kill them. So then that would be the third thing, is like you don't play with a gun. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't. No. No, and in fact, you know, when I was raising my kid, I mean, when, you know, if she ever wanted to take a look at them, in fact, we took a look at them properly, unloaded, and you know, inspected and everything else like that, to the point where she was bored with them. It's like, stop with the guns. So now I know she's not interested, right? So with kids, you know, you can make them, you know, gun safe, gun proof by simply saying, you ever want to take a look? No problem. Here they are. And if not, then you know, they're locked up and locked away, or you know, and these are the basics. These are just the basics, and there are laws against, you know, if your kids get access to guns, you know, that you can go to jail very quickly for that. So there's a lot of protections out there, but you can't protect against stupidity completely. So what Hollywood does, you know, because it's just ironic that they are so against gun ownership for regular Americans, and yet they use guns so much in their films, you know, I think that breeds a kind of arrogance. It's like, we get the guns, you don't. It's an elitism.
Or they have bodyguards that have them.
Yeah. Or in gated communities and wherever. No, most of them have carry permits. I mean, Donald Trump had a carry permit in New York, for example. The elite campaign contributors get carry permits. I guarantee you, Dianne Feinstein, well, I know she did. I don't know if she still does, but Dianne Feinstein, you know, former mayor of San Francisco, senator, you know, from California, I think she's always had a carry permit ever since the assassination of George Moscone, the mayor of New York who was killed along with Harvey Milk. You know, and I forgot, back in the 80s, that's how she became mayor. And you know, she was appointed mayor immediately. Oh, I think she was vice mayor and then state mayor and then, you know, on to senator. I think she's always had a carry permit. Yet she's been one of the strongest proponents of confiscating guns of all Americans. You know, you can't have both ways. The government does not get special privileges above us. You know, and that goes for military and police should not have special privileges to own firearms above the regular citizen, certainly in the jurisdiction of law enforcement and the military. Same thing. You know, you don't get special privileges above the people. All rights have to be equal. And then it comes back to, you know, 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. But it comes down to using your head and just following the very basic rules. If you always assume, and don't even think about it, I don't say, you know, assume this gun is loaded. I say, this gun is loaded. And, you know, the worst that will happen is I'm wrong. It's unloaded. But it doesn't matter because you know in your head, this gun is loaded. Okay, well, I'm going to check it out. Let's see what it is. And every actor should be required to go through some kind of a pre-inspection, you know, where they're the last person to handle that gun. They open up the action. They look at the rounds. They inspect every one of them. They close the action. They put it in a holster, and no one touches that gun after that. You know, the armor should do the same thing. I have, you know, inspected this gun. Here's the situation. You know, okay, actor, you inspect it. Okay. And then it should go in the holster. You don't take it out and play with it. You don't leave it somewhere else. You don't leave it where someone else can tamper with it. You know, it's like chain of custody kind of thing. They should have some kind of a chain of custody where you know, from the armorer to the actor back to the armorer, you know, they should be able to document where those guns go. They may even have a log for it. I don't know. They probably do, you know, or at least they should. Now, whether they kept one or not, I don't know. But if you want to do a fascinating hour sometime, we should talk about the seven events that lead to disasters. You look at a car accident, same thing, you know.
Yeah,
one
that.
Of the drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
What no, it's very true. Yeah, I think that would be good.
Yeah, yeah. And you look at car accidents too, stress. You know, if you have two drivers that are stressed, they got to get to work, you got to commute, you got some bad weather, you know, maybe some wintertime stuff, you know, you've got a bad economy, you know, you've got legal aliens taking jobs, you know, I mean, who knows the factors, but a car accident usually doesn't just happen. There's other things involved. Stress, distraction, you know, maybe too many kids in the car, you know, maybe an urgency, maybe you're late, you know, all these different things contribute to accidents. So accidents aren't really accidents. Accidents, there is a predisposition to set up for an accident where an accident is much more likely to happen because you've got these contributing factors, weather, stress, hunger, deadlines, you know, late, time pressure, all these different things. Usually, if you look at an accident, there's going to be, you know, a bunch of factors involved beyond just two cars hit each other. Interesting. You know, the other thing I heard, too,
yeah.
Just to get back to Helena Hutchins, who apparently has a really interesting life story. I got a New York Post article on here somewhere on my computer. But the rumor was, and this is the immediate rumor, that she was going to do a documentary on pedophiles. And, of course, the assumption or they tried to associate Alec Baldwin with that somehow. And so I don't know. I'm not even going to comment on that. But the point was, that was the immediate theory. That came up, and I actually had it posted for a couple minutes on Facebook, and I thought, you know what, this is just the thing that that a group would post on Facebook just to sort of trap people who you know, they think are conservatives engaged in conspiracy theories. So I get rid of it. But you know, we really have to check stories out as we get fact checked for the truth. We have to fact check them for the planted stories and the lies. It's really quite interesting. Good commentary. Yeah.
Did you have another story? Another thing I want to talk about, which is totally different topic.
Good.
I don't even know if I want to talk about him because he's so incompetent. But it's interesting that, as everybody knows, the wall at the southern border has been halted. You know, the metal is just rusting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it ironic that we are spending $455,000 of taxpayer money for a fence around Biden's summer White House, his beach home at, 32 Fairview. Now, I'm going to butcher this name, and I'm sorry because I can butcher Smith, but Rehoboth, Delaware. And it was given to the contract was given to the Department of Homeland Security. So my question is, why?
What, our tax dollars paid for his security?
Why does he need a fence, a $450,000 fence? Because who knows? It was $456,000 almost, well, over $456,000. Awarded to this contract company to fix the fence, which supposedly is someone or some entity in the Department of Homeland Security. But why does he get a fence around his house? Why does Pelosi get a fence around her house? And I know, did they pay for it? I don't think so. But the poor people that live on the southern border, and it's not even those people, they're in the brunt of it. And that's what's really sad because some of them, the kids can't go to school. Their livelihood has been ruined. And what does the government do? Nothing. Because why? Oh, Biden doesn't need to go down there. He's been down there years ago when he's vice president. He's been down there. He don't need a photo op. It's like, are you kidding me?
We have met the enemy.
He can have us pay $400,000. Well, and that's what they awarded. So probably by the time they're done, it's going to cost closer to $500,000 because they're never on target. But it should be done by December, end of December. But it's like, where's the outcry? It's like, why does he get a border around his summer house? But yes, and the southern border, we can't have a border. And the thing is, with the southern border, you could say, well, it just affects Texas. It just affects Arizona. No, it doesn't, because those people are getting flown to New York, Florida, Massachusetts, Tennessee, everywhere around the country.
There's a bunch of things in what you're talking about, all of which are very valid points. So let's take a look here. It's them and us, you know, and I think I tell this show pretty well today. We have met the enemy and he is us, quoting the famous Pogo quote. So the enemy is not some nation out there. It's not some, well, they are. I mean, but those enemies are empowered by our enemy, which is our own government. And it's not us because we voted for a different government, you know, and I made this post a couple of days ago too, but it's really true that the people chose Donald Trump, the government chose Joe Biden. And so the government is taking their own powers. This is the exact opposite of a constitutional republic. This is a government tyranny. This is a Marxist takeover of what the government is. And of course, all the problems you look at are all caused by government. And I was reading something on the supply chain. The reason we have supply chain problems is not COVID. It's not lazy people. It's what it really comes down to. And I found an article was alerted to this person on One American News, but there's a guy from the Heritage Foundation, one of their offshoots, has a great article on what's really the cause is the government of California. The state government of California, when they should have dumped Gavin Newsom, I still believe he was dumped. You know, I don't think that was a legitimate election. And of course, the Geldings didn't watch it, so it was allowed to happen. So Gavin Newsom's in power, and they passed a law. I think it's AB5, which says that there are no independent contractors. So they don't believe in Uber, they don't believe in independent truck drivers, they don't believe in anybody who wants to work as an independent contractor, because they want the tax money. They want companies to pay, you know, health and safety and things like that. And there is a problem with that. A lot of companies treat people like employees, but make them independent contractors so they can save money. That's a limited problem, but it is definitely a problem. But the idea that somebody can't be an independent truck driver or an independent Uber driver who wants to and doesn't care about all that other stuff, that's a different thing. And so what they've done is they basically destroyed the trucking industry in California by not allowing independent truckers. And the second thing they did was they had pollution standards that were so strict that no truck could meet them. This is why you don't see California cars. You know, people don't want to move there for their cars, or you know, because the pollution standards are so strict. They have a car. They basically, the standards are designed to make your car unable to pass a smog check when it's 4 years old. Well, there's an awful lot of lower and middle income people that want to keep a car more than 4 years, and that can't afford a new car to begin with. Yes, but the situation is so strict there. It's cheaper to actually keep buying a new car because that's what California wants. So they're sacrificing the lower and middle classes. They're sacrificing their independent workers, and there's your supply chain problem. So there's a reason it's originating in California. You know, I don't know why Seattle and Portland haven't picked up the slack, except that Long Beach is such a great port when it's working. But there are other problems and things like that. Anyway, I think I kind of got off a little bit of a tangent here of where we started this, but that's basically it's not the problem you think it is. It's never, you know, it comes back to Biden and the border. So let me bring it, you know, I think that's where we're at. Yeah. This is a crazy morning here. So the problems of Biden and the border, you've got to look at the real problem and then you get the real cause. You know, the theory in Washington is that, and I have arguments with our Washington guy all the time. They think of it as incompetence. These people are stupid. They don't know what they're doing. They're so bad at what they make these horrendous mistakes. I don't believe that for a second. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think this is all by design, and they're trying to systematically destroy our country so they can create their own, you know, utopia when they rebuild after the anarchy collapse. So why would you bring in 1 million illegal aliens? You know, just, imagine you're Joe Biden. Well, imagine you're Barack Obama. That's probably a better example because we don't know what Joe's doing. But so if you're Barack Obama and you're the Democrats, why would you bring in a million illegal aliens? Why would you do that to this country? She's probably looking up stuff.
A voter, yeah. Voter base, and part of it is just they want. I don't want to say they want certain people here, but they do. They want certain.
They do
people
want certain
that
people
are going to fall under their beck and call.
Yeah. Okay. So let's imagine that they want a subservient, dependent peasant class. Okay. What better than to take the world's poor, you know, who can't work, who don't have skills, who don't speak the language, who are going to inflate the welfare rolls, who are going to inflate the schools, the public schools, who are going to inflate, they're going to steal the lowest income jobs, and they're going to do nothing for this country and everything against this country and shouldn't be here to begin with. These aren't people of merit that are coming here. These are people that are running through police barricades. These are people that that aren't checked, aren't vetted, have no business being here. They leave their IDs at home, and here they are. So why did everybody says that they're here to you know, increase votes to the Democrat Party. Now, we all know that illegal aliens can't vote, right?
Not
he said with a grin.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the problem then. So what this has done is proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that illegal aliens vote. Because if illegal aliens didn't vote, why would you want them here? Unless they serve the Democrat Party. So how do they serve the Democrat Party? They serve the Democrat Party by increasing welfare, by increasing government spending, therefore increasing government power. So this is a power enhancement. The teachers union want as many schools as possible, to employ as many teachers as possible, to have as many teacher union dues as possible. Okay? So the answer to these problems is to defeat the reasons that people come here. All right. And so the way you do that is with our bill. The first thing you do is with our bill that we have here at Santa Rosa County, Florida, it's going to come out a press release. We're going to sort of release this to a bunch of people. So hopefully other counties all across the country will model this. But you use asset forfeiture. You take away all their stuff. And then you take away, and here's what really, the really effect of this law is, you take away all the stuff from people who help the illegal aliens. All the companies, all the government agencies, you know, defund them. I don't know what we're going to do about government agencies. Maybe just arrest the people. But, yeah, you know, so use asset forfeiture to take illegal alien stuff and the stuff from people who help them. And that would include all the non-government organizations, Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, things like that. You take all their stuff, all their assets. This is going to stop pretty quickly. You stop the reason for being here. You know, E-Verify. But more than that, you document citizenship in a bunch of different places. I mean, they document your ID for your age to buy alcohol. When, you know, your citizenship should be there, too. It should be on the driver's license. So there are ways to deal with this. You make it more expensive for illegal aliens to be here. They're not going to be here. You make life for them so miserable here, they're not going to be here. You know, but this is by design. Why do you think there's 100,000 Afghanis? We're sitting right at Kabul Airport, you know, when Biden surrendered to the Taliban. I mean, they weren't there by accident. They got the word. They got the word to be there, and they were going to be evacuated. So this was not, an incompetent withdrawal. this was an organized and planned surrender. Okay, so that's how I see this. And you look at any of these problems. The border, the first thing they did was get rid of the border. Why? Because they want illegal aliens here. Why? Because they want votes. Why? Because they want power. This is all by design. But here's what we don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say about Afghanistan. The sad thing is you hardly hear that in the news ever at all anymore.
Well, that's by design.
But there still are people trying to get out of there. And the government just doesn't want us to know that. I mean, that is just so sad that when you look at who they brought over here, who, why didn't they bring back the people that were legal citizens of this country?
I'll tell you. I think you know why.
That were not.
You know why? Because they're no use to the Democrat Party.
It's what you're saying. Exactly.
Yeah. So Obama brings in 100,000, you know, Muslim Afghani goat herders and their 5-year-old wives. I'm going to use that example because that's based on truth. That's based on some really horrible instances of people, of old men being found with 5-year-old wives from Afghanistan on those airplanes. I'm not just making that up, okay? But so he brings in all those people, you know, people that are inherently disgusting. They don't care about our country. They care about Sharia law. They basically, he imported the Taliban. So Obama brought in the Taliban. Well, why would you bring in the Taliban? They're a bunch of terrorists. Well, why would you bring in a bunch of terrorists? Well, do the same things that Antifa and Black Lives Matter do, terrorize this country. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, to make people fearful. Well, why would you want to do that? So the government can come in and bring safety. Well, how are they going to do that? Well, they're going to take our guns away. You see how this works? It's all by design. This is very predictable. It's so predictable, in fact, I'm surprised that more people don't understand it. So, but a lot of it has to do with language. If you talk about Biden as the surrender, if you talk about this as, you know, as an importation, and look at the track record of Obama too. Whenever there were hostages overseas, did he ever rescue them? No. Why? Because they didn't serve his party. They didn't serve his cause. They didn't serve his ideology. Individuals don't matter to Democrats. That's why they don't rescue hostages. You know, how long did Carter leave our folks in the Iranian and in our embassy in Tehran? What, 444 days? You know, because they don't care about individuals, because it's group. It's the group that matters, not the individual. So Trump got all our hostages out that he could. You know, warm beer from North Korea. Unfortunately, he died a week later. But you look at the difference between Trump, who brought hostages out. This never would have happened under Trump. Never. But that's the difference between a government. That's the difference between a government elected by the people and a government chosen by the government for the government to increase their power. So that's why it doesn't work. You know, the founders were right. You can't make the system work. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just going to say, talking about Biden, I just listened to a tiny bit of what he's saying yesterday or whenever he was in Virginia trying to
I'm sorry.
Get people to vote for that, oh my God, the Democrat.
Oh, to vote for McCullough?
The ex-governor that wants to be governor again, that, oh my gosh. Anyway.
Yeah, the criminal?
The
bag man, as they say.
He's just one, oh my God. Person filled with hate. You listen to him talk, it's like miserable.
McAuliffe? Of course.
Obama when he was
Biden?
Talking. Just
what did Obama
listen
say?
To his words and I can't even explain it how he has such little, I don't want to say respect, that's not the right word. But for the United States as a whole, I mean, he don't like this country. Or maybe he likes the country, he don't like the people in it, put it that way. Yeah, you know, just listening to him talk, I was just like, wow, that is just so depressing.
Well, there's contempt for the American people. See, the American people don't count. The American people are to serve the government. See, that's the difference between a republic and an oligarchy or a tyranny. The tyranny believes that they are entitled to everything, all the power, all the wealth, all the goodies. The laws don't apply to them. That's why they don't wear masks. That's why I'm sure they haven't got, quote, vaccinated, even though they make little camera appearances. Those are the saline or retractable needles because they know they're. They don't do the thing that we do. They don't send their kids to government schools, yet they mandate everybody else go. So they have their own set of rules, and this is the biggest problem with elitism. So it makes perfect sense that they wouldn't they would have contempt for the American people. You know, flyover country, right? Well, flyover country is where the food's grown. You know, flyover country is where all the transit routes are. Flyover country is where all the Americans, the industrial heartland. That's where the goods get produced, folks. Okay, it's not flyover country. It's America, but they don't think of it that way. You know, they fly from Hollywood to New York, and you know, they think of the country in the middle as kind of like, you know, just too long. It's just like, you know, flight time. But that's who they are. And you look at that contempt, and you can bring it back to Alec Baldwin, you know, killing Helena Hutchins. Arrogance, elitism, the laws don't apply to me. I don't have to practice gun safety rules. I'm a Hollywood actor. You know, it doesn't apply to him. And this is where these things happen. So they think that the laws don't apply, the Constitution doesn't apply. The only thing they care about is their own power and accumulating wealth. The love of power and money is the root of all, you know, leftist evil. Let me modify the saying a little bit. You know, we have met the enemy and he is us, the title of the show. That, you know, the enemies of the people are the people that want to control the people. It really is.
True.
And,
yeah. You know, but it's interesting, too, Biden's town hall. And as I said, I didn't listen to it, but I'm getting bits and pieces of it. And when he said compromise, the Republicans just have to compromise. Well, I think we need to explain what compromise means. I don't want to say the dictionary meaning of it, because that's not what Biden knows compromise to mean. To him, compromise is do what I say and what I want.
Well, compromise to Democrats is when Republicans agree with them. But as Claire Lopez explained, this is the controlled opposition. I mean, this is why I call them the geldings. You know, there is no opposition. I mean, they are all part of the uniparty, you know, as people say. So they fake opposition, but they support all the big things. They support the debt ceiling increase. You know, they support putting a coup, an insurrection in power. They support the government, you know, bringing the government to power, the government choosing the president, which is really what happened. The government chose the president. You know, it wasn't the people, because the people chose a different one. You know, and so if you look at it that way, that the arrogance of these people, that, you know, and here's the thing, too. Even One American News, as courageous as they are, what they really should be doing is not covering Biden at all. Don't put on his press speeches. Don't put on his commentary, with the simple reason that, I'm sorry, we can't put on somebody who wasn't duly elected to office. I mean, really take a stand. If they're really courageous, that's what they would do. You know, and they're probably the biggest of the best of the bigger media, and they're not even that big. But the courage is lacking. I mean, you know, the real courage, the courage that I hope we show here, that we'll continue to show when we have you know, a million listeners and leftists outside our door with forks and signs and you know, AK-47s and whatever else they bring. You know, you have to have the courage to say, you know, Dr. Fascist is a psychopathic genocidal drug pusher. You have to be able to say that if a million people are listening or fewer, you know. So you've got to have the courage of your convictions, okay? So we need to stand strong against these people. And you'll notice, and the fascinating thing is that they're caving. The left caves really quickly with any kind of opposition. This is why you don't have to be afraid of them.
Although the right.
Well, the right's afraid because the right wants to be the left. You know, the alleged conservatives, you know, want what the left has. They want the power. They want the money. They want to be them. Okay, so you have to really identify. This is why I don't use the word conservative too often, especially or Republicans. But I don't care. They're of no help.
Right.
You know, I mean, where is the Republican audit? Where is the funding from the GOP for any audit? Where is the daily press conference denouncing the coup? You know, that's where they should be. You know, where is a set of new conservative media? You know, I kind of wish Trump had forgotten politics and just set up his own, you know, media channel. You know, people would watch it. But as long as they had the real courage, and this is what we're trying to do. When we report on stuff and we talk about things, we talk about it in very stark, blank terms. I mean, you know, who else calls Dr. Fascist Dr. Fascist except us? But that's who he is. You know, that man may have killed more people than the Civil War by withholding medical treatment, by banning the cures to COVID, all right, and causing all the hospitals to give false treatments and drugs like remdesivir, which killed 30% of the people who get it with kidney failure. You know, and that's out there. That's known. So you look at any problem that we have today, it's caused by this insurrection coup d'etat government, from the supply chain to the energy to the inflation to the printing of money to lack of workers to the open border. You look at any problem that we have today, none of these things existed under Trump. This has all come about because of a government choosing its own government. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
And,
yeah.
And you talk about the election, though. It's like never ending. But Arizona is like the attorney general has the information. And, you know, there's still things that they need to do yet. But it's like...
What are they doing with it?
Who knows what's going to come to fruition.
But why is it taking so long?
Well, yeah, here's the thing too. Basically, the Attorney General, I mean, it's in his hands now. You know, I mean, it really is. And I don't know. You know, so who knows what he's going to do? I don't know. They can't decertify until they get all the information, if they're going to do that. You know, and that's an option. And the Attorney General, he needs to investigate. And they said he does have, they sent him the information. And so he knows what's going on. But then still are waiting. What are they? They're still waiting on stuff that the election committee, whoever the people are holding off on stuff. I don't understand why they haven't been charged with anything yet, because they're tampering. They're basically tampering with evidence. And for them to say that they deleted information before they handed the stuff over right away, that should be, you know, that should be a penalty somewhere. But
it should be disqualification.
If anything.
You know, I mean, if you cheat in a race and you come in third, it doesn't matter. You're still disqualified because you cheated. Same thing here. You don't have to find every fraudulent vote to know that there were a mass amount of fraudulent votes. The fraudulent votes don't have to change the outcome of the election to be fraudulent votes. The fact that there are any fraudulent votes, you know, it should be enough to disqualify a candidate. Now, I wouldn't say like two or three. You know, I'm talking about a major amount of fraud, an organized, systematic fraud of mail-in ballots, of signatures that weren't checked, of Dominion voting machines that are connected to the internet. When you've got anywhere near in any one of those, should disqualify a candidate. Okay, the fact that you have all three, and plus the registration frauds, plus all the other stuff that goes on, the ballot harvesting, anything else, any one of those should cause the disqualification of a candidate. Now, what Arizona should have done months ago, at least after the presentation of their audit, they should have had a vote in the Arizona Senate to decertify or what I would say disqualify Biden from the ballot and say, look, you screwed up, you cheated. Okay, so they decertify, they recall their electors. Now, whether they make those Trump elect or not, that's a different story. That's something that, you know, we can see what Arizona does with it. But at the very least, they should already have decertified their Biden electors. The audits in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia should already have taken place. They should have started when Arizona started. Okay, there's only 22 months, you know, before all this stuff gets tossed. So what they're trying to do is delay until then, you know, until the midterms. All this. So that would be 2 months before, it would be September. So September 2022 is when all this ends. So they have until then, so it's a little less than a year left to get this all taken care of. But the problem is people are going to say, well, it's the midterms now. You can't interfere with the election. You know, that's old news. That's already happened. But there is no 2022. Remember when I said there is no 2022 unless we fix 2020?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you look at December of 2020, when the two fraudulent Georgia senators were fraudulently put in. You look at the election of the recall of Gavin Newsom that went Gavin Newsom's way. And people said, well, it's California. You know, of course, there's too many Democrats. Well, that's not the reason. I'm sure there's tons of fraud in there. Right? He should have been disqualified and recalled for that. Right? So every election after November 3rd, 2020 has been a fraudulent election. So because they didn't fix 2020, they didn't fix the original fraud. And because they haven't fixed the original fraud, there's no reason to assume that 2022 is going to be any different. You know, all these folks that say, well, we're going to win back the House in 2022. No, you're not. Not until you fix the vote fraud. Not until you fix the results of that election. You start decertifying because there's no incentive to stop cheating.
Right.
None. There's no incentive to stop cheating. So that's what they're going to do. Anyway, let me take a break for a bit here. I'm going to play our new Santa Rosa Volunteers that I made literally right before the show started today. I mispronounced a word, which is kind of fascinating. The word chimera, which you might pass over, I pronounced it by mistake, chimera, as I'm quickly reading through. I'm having a struggle with some of these words and expressions, the way the founders, you know, because I'm reading quotes from the Exact Federalist Papers, or in this case, the Anti-Federalist Papers. But what's interesting, their choice of words, the words that I don't recognize, the words that that are just not in common usage anymore, and the way they put things together is very confusing. Try reading them out loud. You want to have some fun? Try reading, you know, any founding document out loud. You're going to stumble and, you know, all over the place, like I tend to do. Anyway, let me play this. We'll come back. We've got Shelby coming up with Cruise and Travel. We've got Josie coming up with the Latina Report. And we got the third hour for who knows what. We'll figure it out when we get there.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This is part two of perhaps the most brilliant piece of founders' writing after the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson and The Crisis by Thomas Paine. And for this one, I have no idea who wrote it. I'm going to jump around a bit to get you caught up with Federalist Papers number 6 and the folly of the arguments of Publius, a.k.a. John Jay, and his preposterous assumption that the Constitution has to be ratified or the estates under the Articles of Confederation will break into 3 or 4 separate confederacies and the Union will be lost. The fact that no such evidence or circumstance for this exists is irrelevant to the elitists pushing the Constitution for their own personal gain and power. Pretty much what goes on today. So here is what Sentinel, pen name of the author of Anti-Federalist No. 6, said about John Jay's arguments. This hobgoblin appears to have sprung from the deranged brain of Publius, a New York writer who, mistaking sound for argument, has with Herculean labor accumulated myriads of unmeaning sentences and mechanically endeavored to force conviction by a torrent of misplaced words. He might have spared his readers the fatigue of wading through his long-winded disquisitions on the direful effects of the contentions of inimical states as totally inapplicable to the subject he was professedly treating. This writer has devoted much time and wasted more paper in combating chimeras of his own creation. That's how you insult someone, founder style. When it comes to explaining the reasons behind John Jay's arguments that the United States will descend into despotism and fracture, all from no evidence, logic, or reason for such events to suddenly take place if the Articles of Confederation remain in force, even though no such action or suggestion of such action had taken place under the Articles so far. Sentinel then says this: the source of the apprehensions of this so much dreaded anarchy would, upon investigation, be found to arise from the artful suggestions of designing men, and not from a rational probability grounded on the actual state of affairs. The least reflection is sufficient to detect the fallacy to show that there is no one circumstance to justify the prediction of such an event. On the contrary, a short time will evince, to the utter dismay and confusion of the conspirators, that a perseverance in cramming down their scheme of power upon the freemen of this state, Pennsylvania, will inevitably produce an anarchy destructive of their darling domination, and may kindle a flame prejudicial to their safety. They should be cautious not to trespass too far on the forbearance of freemen when resting their dearest concerns, but prudently retreat from the gathering storm. The whole point to me of John Jay using false arguments for the Constitution are to generate fear, because people with fear can be led to places they would never go otherwise. Take a look at the entire response to COVID from government. Every bit of it is based on fear, on preposterous arguments of hiding and suppressing evidence of relief, and of making people do things they would never do using their own judgment and choice. Just like when considering the Constitution at our founding, fear is used to abandon completely the Articles of Confederation, where only minor amendments might have sufficed. Sentinel then says this: the other specter that has been raised to terrify and alarm the people out of their exercise of their judgment on this great occasion is the dread of our splitting into separate confederacies or republics. that might become rival powers and consequently liable to mutual wars from the usual motives of contention. This is an event still more improbable than the foregoing. It is a presumption unwarranted either by the situation of affairs or the sentiments of the people. No disposition leading to it exists. The advocates of the new Constitution seem to view such a separation with horror, and its opponents are strenuously contending for a confederation that shall embrace all America under its comprehensive and salutary protection. Sentinel continues by considering John Jay's arguments of the necessity of the Constitution or else. I will admit that the necessary consequence of rejecting or delaying the establishment of the new Constitution would be the dissolution of the Union and the institution of even rival and inimical republics. Yet ought such an apprehension, if well-founded, to drive us into the fangs of despotism? Infinitely preferable would be the occasional wars to such an event. The former, although a severe scourge, is transient in its continuance and in its operations partial, but a small proportion of the community are exposed to its greatest horrors, and yet fewer experience its greatest evils. The latter is permanent and universal misery, without remission or exception. As passing clouds obscure for a time the specter of the sun, so do wars interrupt the welfare of mankind. But despotism is a settled gloom that totally extinguishes happiness. Not a ray of comfort can penetrate to cheer the dejected mind. The goad of power with unabating rigor insists upon the utmost exaction. Like a merciless taskmaster, it is continually inflicting the lash and is never satiated with the feast of unfeeling domination or the most abject servility. My comment is that this brilliant expose of the fraud of the Federalist is the perfect precursor to the fraud of the deep state today. And as they try to resurrect the globalist cabal in control, which Trump actually challenged successfully, and they try to reduce our country to an everlasting gloom of work, taxes, and death, people all over the country are learning, just as the country did in the 1700s, that doom and gloom is not inevitable, and that a powerful, dominating elite is not in control because they say they are, and that nothing is preordained to get us there or keep us there. However, then as now, all that is necessary for powerful elites to run everything, gather all the power to themselves, and to let them accumulate all the wealth and property for themselves is to believe their lies, do nothing, and then complain every step on the way down to tyranny that somebody should do something. Well, that somebody is you. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Yeah, man. Como Shelby, to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go. Well, now that I have your attention,
I'm just having fun pushing buttons. I made all these things. I just have to use them more. Let's bring on Shelby right away. And now that I've played her theme, she's early. She's wonderful. And what's my favorite saying, Shelby?
I'm Shelby. You're fabulous.
There we go. Now I can continue my day. Well, see, we keep missing this. I've been totally screwing up our goodbyes because, you know, there's usually like five or six callers or all these things happening.
It's
exciting.
You know, don't worry.
People,
it's all good.
People have to.
This is a good problem to have.
You gotta, yeah, but you know, I don't like to let people go without, you know, at least saying goodbye and hearing my favorite saying. Okay, so let's get, since you're here now, let's get started a little bit earlier because I know stuff's going on in travel. There's new insurrection travel requirements. There's new from the coup. I think I should start a new feature Action Radio. New from the coup, and now the latest from the Biden insurrection. That might be kind of interesting. So, yeah, you want to hit travel right away, or do you want to comment on anything that we've been commenting on so far? Feel free.
I'll start with just a little travel, but you, if you have any questions particularly, maybe I need to look them up while I'm on here. But I would just say,
okay.
On Thursday, you know, Canadian government rolled back its guidance against all non-essential travel, which is the first time since the pandemic, just FYI.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has been like completely locked down until Thursday. And the land borders are reopening to vaccinated Canadian tourists. So they could not leave by land or get back in without being vaccinated before. But now it's they are opening up land borders to vaccinated guests. I thought that was kind of interesting because it has been a couple years. And I find Canada to be a really intriguing case study, let's call it, you know, in comparison to the U.S. because we share so much. And you know, we're North America, we're the same land base, right? And Mexico has done it so differently. And it was almost like, the Mexico was as lenient as they come. The U.S. was moderately, under wraps, and then Canada was like under lock and key. And I'm very curious to figure out eventually how that changed everything on a global scale. Like, really, what was the difference? How many people were saved? Were they saved? You know, it just will be interesting to see because it's not like. They did a lot like Australia did or is doing, Canada. And it just, I mean, obviously I'm a lot more flexible. And, of course, as I've said before, you know, my particular health and my family's health is, we're in a very low percentage of even getting worried at all really by this. So we have a different perspective than others, but maybe more lenient perspective. But yet, you know, it just seems mind-blowing how locked down Canada could be. And they were happy to do it. There were very, very few Canadians. And I'm Canadian. My husband's Canadian. So we have a lot of Canadian relatives and friends. And I can tell you that 90% of them, 95% of them, were completely for the $2,000 a month. Everybody staying home forever and ever. Amen. Thank you. Thank you for keeping us so safe. No worries about the future. Now just get vaccinated, hurry up. It's really kind of wild, you know.
That's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying.
Mind-blowing, really.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with you completely, but I think it's absolutely terrifying. The rapidity, the speed, the efficiency by which the American public, you know, the land of the free, the home of the brave, which became the land of the subservient, the home of the fearful, you know, kowtowed and just ducked and covered. And that's an old, you know, Cold War analogy, you know, kids just actually had to duck under their desks and cover their faces, you know, when the nuclear belt blast came, right? Weird stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I never did. I was in Australia. We had different stuff going on. But think about this, you know, and this is one of the biggest things we're fighting here at Action Radio is the apathy that, well, I can't do anything. I'm just one person. And so I made a comment on Facebook. Well, everybody's just one person, you know, so what are you going to do? that's not a choice.
It's much deeper than that, though. I mean, you're talking
well,
about.
I haven't begun to say it, but yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, but the point is that the you know, we talk about, especially in this country, you know, a pride of having, you know, the rights of the individual be paramount, of a constitution, of a republic, of rights that are written in the constitution that government cannot touch in any way. And yet they did, and yet people put up with it. So obviously we're, you know, living a lie. And the lie was that most Americans believe in freedom, because apparently they don't. Canada and Australia are even worse, you know, and I don't remember. I left Canada when I was 8 years old, so I don't remember, you know, much about the government or the culture or, you know, so I want to go back and spend some time in Canada just for this reason, that I want to understand how they gave up so quickly. And this is a country, see, I remember, you know, 1967, I remember the centennial, you know, when Canada was 100 years old and celebrated the independence from England from 1867, you know, and Canadians were proudly independent. This is a little off track, but there was an airplane, and this is sort of indicative of what happened to Canada. Canada had the world's greatest fighter airplane in 1959. It was called the Avro Arrow. It was built by Canadians, was engineered by Canadians. It was decades ahead of any other fighter in the world. It still would rank among the top fighters in the world, you know, what, 60 years later. But Diefenbaker, the prime minister at the time, canceled it because he was, you know, sucking up to Americans. And I guess the United States didn't want the competition, you know, and so I don't know whether it was paid off or whatever happened. But Canada lost one of the things that would have made Canadians amazingly proud. And that was this incredible fighter aircraft that would have defended Canada. It would have changed the balance of the Cold War. It, like I said, this plane was like Mach 2. It was twice the speed of sound, you know, internal weapons, the whole bit. I won't get into all the details. But Canada lost so much. They didn't just lose an airplane. Canada lost their Canadian-ness. They lost their independence. They lost their what was, you know, a unifying thing. I mean, it's, you know, you can unify around an airplane. You, like the United States unified around, you know, when Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic. You know, they're unifying things, and this was a thing for Canada. And ever since then, I don't know, I think that was kind of like a change in the character. And as these countries, you know, Canada, the British Commonwealth countries, Britain, Canada, the United States, Britain, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand have become more and more like the socialist, you know, the European Union, the rest of Europe, they've lost their character. I think Canadians have lost what it means to be Canadian. And that doesn't mean the same thing as being American. They're very different. You know, Canada is where the loyalists went. You know, the people that didn't want to, you know, that were happy being British colonies, you know, when the United States started the war for independence, they didn't want to be here, so they went to Canada. Okay, I understand that. But there was a certain thing about being Canadian that I think Canada has lost. There was something about being Australian that Australia has lost. I remember being there. You know, we're talking about a country of basically Irish prisoners, a very independent, rabble-rousing, you know, very competitive people that love their freedom. Well, what the hell happened to them? So this is something that the history books are going to have to analyze. But I think they've lost so much of who they were. And I think it started, you know, back 1959. You know, with the Avro Arrow in Canada, and you can probably point to separate events in Australia and England too, but they don't know what it is to be, Canadians don't know what it is to be Canadian anymore. And I think that's why they're so subservient to power. They've replaced power and subservience to power, and they've replaced fear with being independent Canadians. That, I think, is where it all comes to. And that's why they'll take the money. They'll take the money over independence. See, back in the Depression, you couldn't pay people welfare in the Depression because they wouldn't take it. So they have to work. They had too much pride to take welfare. Nowadays, people run to countries to get it. Look at 1 million people just crossed our border so they can live off American taxpayers and do nothing. You know, and so we've lost what it means to be Americans. Canada's lost what it means to be Canadians. There's a national identity crisis. And I think that's causing a lot of the fear and a lot of the subservience to government policies that make absolutely no sense and are actually making things far worse than they ever needed to be. If we just left this thing alone, it would have run its course in 8 to 10 weeks and would have been gone by natural immunity. And yet here it is, you know, almost 2 years later, and it's still here. That's what's going on. I'd be curious what you think about that.
Well, there's a lot of things there.
I know.
You started with one person. Yeah. We're all one people. We're all one person, which I think you're trying to say.
No,
you know,
what I'm saying
is
that everybody's an individual. Everybody's an individual. So
I understand.
Someone says, I can't do anything, I'm one person. Well, everybody's one person. You know,
right. It's a lot more complicated than that. You've got, you know, government, all government at this point, I think all places, all government is pretty much paid off and bought for the most part these days. Mm-hmm. That's really a lot more power than a lot of people that are not involved in this legislation and they're not the right people, you know, so we don't have. Mm. The people that are in power are mostly going for, you know, this type of, I don't want to say socialist because I'm not sure that's the right word in my vocabulary for this, but this lockdown type of mentality, you know, and that's, so it's not just one person, it's not just one voice, it's a lot more complicated than that, that's what I would say about that. As far as Canadians' values and being Canadian, this is going to rub almost every Canadian the wrong way. So I'm trying to figure out a way to have it be receptive. But I can only speak from my own experience, right? And I've had a lot of them. Most of my family is from Quebec, which is a really very family-oriented and proud Canadian type of mentality. In fact, I'm sure most of you know Quebec wanted to separate from Canada mm-hmm. several times. And I definitely believe that there was Canadian patriotism in a larger way when we were much younger, but I think it was around the 60s and 70s especially that they started to really promote immigration to Canada, and it became, I would not call it a melting pot by any stretch, because they have an interesting immigration system where they don't melt at all. They let everybody keep their own everything, whatever their religious beliefs are, which, you know, we all probably agree that that's a great idea, whatever their cultural beliefs are. But what ends up happening is, or what has happened from my perspective, is these cultures have come in and completely taken over Canada and made it their own culture from their own place. So it's not Canada anymore. For instance, in Vancouver, it's mostly Asian from my perspective, and they call it Hongkoover. I don't know if that's a PC term or not, but that's what they call it. And it is like a mini, I mean, I've been to China and Hong Kong, and it's like that. I mean, it really is. And people don't speak English or French, and those are the two languages. Nobody speaks any of those. And so there's, you know, there's that, and there's a huge, huge up-and-coming Muslim culture that is definitely not assimilating. Like, you know, they were, when we were in Toronto, that was extremely prevalent, where women were in the back of the cars and the men were driving in the front, and that was very weird to me. And I couldn't make a play date with my son unless I spoke to the father, and I wasn't really allowed to speak to the father because I'm a woman. So it was very hard for me to digest that and see that not only, you know, and I was looked upon as the way I felt when I went to some of those Muslim cultured, Muslim countries, that I was looked upon as some sort of vixen because I wasn't covered from head to toe. And I'm very stylish, and that's just who I am. I'm provocative. I am. That's who I am. And that's who I've been allowed to be. So it's very weird to be looked upon as if some sort of negative vixen type thing. So that was interesting. So people segregate very much so in that in Toronto, because they, you know, you have the normal, the longevity heritage Canadians that have to live next to other people that are just doing their own thing from their own country. And there is no assimilation. In fact, in Toronto, they just, couple years back, they just had approved allowing the call to prayer, which is that in Muslim countries before, like the five times a day, I think, they get called to prayer with this.
They have minarets.
All throughout. They allow that now throughout the city. So that, which I feel like is like, wow, that's pretty, it's pretty overwhelming if you're against that sort of cultural type. And it's not religious based. I call it cultural based, because you're talking about a religion that believes that women shouldn't be having rights. So there's a cultural aspect of it. It's not just a religious belief, you know? Anyway, so Canadians in general, I think, have felt like they have lost their country, because there hasn't been, it has not been a melting pot. And those are just two prime examples, but big ones. And I feel like also now you add into the pot where you had said the people in the Depression wouldn't even take, they wouldn't even take money because of their pride. That's a cultural belief thing where you feel bad because everybody feels like you're a horrible person if you take this money, whereas that is different. That's like we used to wear top hats and used to never go into a restaurant without having being well dressed, and there were, you know, you wouldn't need a dress code. You just knew because you were cultured and taught by your family that this was the right thing to do. These things are all out the window now. Like, I mean, you go to church in jeans, nobody cares. Everything is very relaxed. Nobody feels like they are being subjected to any even subconscious negativity if they take money in Canada or anywhere else. I think the cultural belief is now take what you can get. And that has changed. So so the acceptance of that money has changed. And then I'll finish up by saying, I also just think that we're at a time right now where if I could see the future, and I'm not claiming I can, because I'm not very good at that, but I just feel like we're in the good part of the weighing. I hate the word use socialism because it's just too overused, but I think we're in the good part of before it gets bad, you know? So people are like, oh, this is fine, this is okay. But they really do not see that it's very quickly before we start printing all that money, before we start giving away all that money. That's just very, it's a very quick change over from opulence to desperation. And they're really just living in the opulence part of it. And it's nothing bad has happened yet, so it probably won't. It's kind of their mentality. So I feel like we're in a little bit of a different, like they don't realize, they haven't done enough history work that they see the patterns repeating themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say about that.
Yeah, yeah. I want a couple of comments, and I'm going to bring Gene into this as well. That was brilliant, opulence to desperation, because socialism works until it doesn't. You know, in other words, it's great to be able to hand out, you know, money and redistribute wealth and have all these programs and print money from the government so that, you know, there's more in the economy and it's looked upon as a stimulus. But what those things do, they sow the seeds of disaster, because the more money you print, the higher the prices go, because you've got more money out there. And as you print more and more dollars, each dollar becomes less valuable. You know, you're not building wealth. You're just printing paper, and it's like a, you know, my pizza analogy. If you have 8 slices in a pizza, in a pizza, you know, and you say, well, I want more pizza, I'm going to make 16 slices. Well, great. Well, those 16 slices are half the size of your 8 slices. You haven't created more pizza. You actually have to make more pizza, which would be like making wealth. So people, you know, it's very short-sighted. When I made that comment about, you know, everybody, you know, when someone says, and I hear this all the time, I'm just one person, what can I do? And I didn't say that people should all act as one voice. What I'm saying is that everybody is just one person. So whether you're Nathan Hale or Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or Martin Luther King or any of the folks that fought for freedom and created alliances and built, you know, all kinds of wonderful folks around them, they were one person. So what I'm saying is I'm trying to activate the people, you know, to say that don't say you're one person, because everybody's one person. So the question is, what are you going to do as that one person? That's what's going to make the difference. Fascinating insight into Canada, because again, I left when I was a kid, and I left in the 60s. And so, you know, I left, I think I saw like the first season of Star Trek, you know, and then I didn't catch it until, you know, years later, because they didn't have it in Australia. They didn't even have color TV when I got to Australia, which is quite fascinating. It was like a giant step backwards about 20 years. Now it's pretty much the same. But the identity, I think, you know, and I are both saying the same things, that, you know, I was thinking of Canada as having lost the Canadian identity that I saw in 1967 at the Canadian National Exhibition in Montreal. Which was wonderful. It was a huge celebration of Canada being Canada. And that's the last event that I remember, you know, of Canada really celebrating being Canadian. And the thing about immigration, people lose sight of what it's for. Immigration is to make your country better. And the way you make your country better is you bring in folks that make your country better, that want to be Canadians, that want to be Americans, that want to be Australians and want to be British. That's the only reason that anybody should come to your country. And it's got to be based on merit, and they have to bring in something that regular, the citizens of that country don't have enough of. You know, like if we wanted to, make it easier for truck drivers to come here, for example, you know, but
Canada is just so vast. They need more people. I mean, they actually just need people. And I think that's probably more about the New World was like that too. You know, they say we come from a country of immigrants. I said, well, you know, we had a lot of space then. So we were looking to fill it up.
We don't know.
That's what Canada is doing too, you know.
But how much of Canada can you live in? It's freezing.
Well, right now, not as much, but the more people that get there, the more infrastructure they'll build, right? I mean,
well,
people will come.
That makes sense.
But they have the land, and a lot of people don't have that.
That is true.
One of the biggest problems Canadians have is that the people from Asia specifically, from my understanding, from what I'm being told by them, the Asians have a lot more money, and they come and they buy up the properties in Canada so the Canadians can't afford to pay. Because like when we were living there, I mean, to me it was like coming from having a place in Florida and even Massachusetts, which is higher expenses there. I was like, I am not spending my money here. $500,000 for half a house in a place that like isn't nothing but like a regular little place, and it's freezing and the weather sucks, and I get 8x8 as my back room, you know, terrace. No thanks. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend $500,000 on literally a little patch of land in this great big white north. Like, no, I don't think so. I mean, I'll spend $500,000 and live on a lake in Florida next 3 miles from the ocean. That sounds good. Okay. But I ain't doing it there. Like, why the hell are these prices so expensive? Because you guys aren't making that much money. And, you know, of course, the free health care. I love that. But I just always want to say my husband literally, he worked for the same company with the same wage and went from U.S. to Canada. And nothing changed except for we paid a little bit more in taxes. So we actually paid more in health care under the taxes, you know, covered as taxes because nothing is free. It's government funded, which means taxpayer funded. And so I was like, your free health care costs us more than our health care in the U.S., which is far superior, regardless of what any Canadian says. They don't know the difference if they haven't lived in both places for a good amount of time than I have. And it's like, wow, we actually paid more. But we've been like the 50% tax bracket up there, which is just insane. And also the free health care. I said the only way it's free is if you don't work. And none of our neighbors worked, which was also interesting. We lived a very meager, medium lifestyle there. But yet we were the only people that actually paid for our rent. Everybody else had government funded, and they had two kids, and nobody worked. And they had it really all figured out. The baby daddies lived on paper, said they lived with the other people, you know, their parents, so that they weren't living in the same household. They weren't legally married, so they could all get extra money for all these little things. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. And they all thought we were crazy. Why are we working so hard? And all we got extra was a nicer inside because our inside was redone. And we got a couple vacations and we had a car, you know. So those were our big perks. But it is fascinating to live next to it, I'll tell you that. And I don't know what's going to happen to Canada because they have such natural resources that no other country has. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Canadians themselves can't afford to buy property and own property because of the fact that so many foreigners coming in and buying it up because they have land there, right? And
well, not to let foreigners buy it. You know, Canada could control
right. Well, that would be a
but,
whole different. They yeah. have they have to change some rules there, but I think that also makes the Canadian, like you're talking, that whole Canadian patriotism sort of be less. You know what I mean? Because they don't have they don't own property a lot. It's like. If they do, it's so small and they like live and die for it. And all they have is enough money to go on their one or two vacations a year. And, I don't know. It's just to that's not.
You've outlined exactly what I think the problem is in that, you know, people, you need to work, you know, and the idea that you can pay people not to work and build that dependent mentality that it's somebody else's job to take care of you. That is the downfall of any nation. You know, assimilation is the key to immigration. People, this is what they're very big on at Ellis Island. You know, back when we had our huge immigration from like 1880 to like 1924 when it stopped. But the whole point was people had to come here to become Americans. You swore allegiance to this country. Now, you can bring your culture, you can bring your language, you can bring anything you want, but you're here to live under American law, under an American constitution, you know, and that your first allegiance is to this country. So bring the richness of the rest of the world. That's never been a problem. If people want to call it the prayer in Toronto, fine, I don't care. I would also, if I had a church, I'd ring the church bells 5 times a day too, just for the hell of it. You know, but what's more important than the call to prayer is the Sharia law. So are these mosques practicing Sharia law, which is generally what they're for? You know, that's in Muslim countries, mosques are also the police and the judge. You know, I'm not sure exactly how it works. Claire Lopez knows better, but that's what a mosque is for. And if Canada is importing other cultures, other nationalities, other laws, you know, other ways of existing, then Canada will cease to be Canada in the same way this country will too. You put 1 million people across our southern border that are non-productive, you know, racing down through police barricades. You know, they're already criminals for coming to the country illegally. They're criminals for assaulting the police on their way in. And, you know, the criminality, once you break one law, it's easier to break more and more laws. So you're basically importing a criminal class of over 1 million people in this country that have no allegiance, none. They're here for the money and the stuff. And you don't think crime's going to be a problem and everything else? This country will cease to be a country if too many people come here to not be Americans. Now, I don't care where people come from. I don't care what their religion is. I don't care what they do. As long as you come here to be American. I came here to be American. Now, I was born in Canada. Do I still feel you know, a great affection for Canada and want to know what the hell's going on out there? You bet. But my allegiance is to this country. That's why I'm here. And that's what most legal immigrants will tell you, because it's a long process to become an American citizen. And it should be. It should be a long process. It's, if you're not born here, it's something you should earn. And, you, and it should take time and effort to do it. That's how you get rid of the people that aren't sincere. So this, you know, you're absolutely right with what's, you know, the mentality of like, you know, you're crazy for working. That's irrational. That's insane. How can a country survive, you know, a population that thinks it's better to take money from other people and sit on their butts, you know, and the government allows it, but the people, but this is the problem with democracies. You know, just to get on this, then I'm going to get to Jean, you know, back in here, because I think I've monopolized too much of her time. But the whole idea of a democracy is that you allow people to vote for anything they want. And if you have a situation where people can vote for anything they want, where you don't have a republic of defined, you know, rights and of the rights of the individual, then the majority will simply vote themselves, you know, the bottom half of the income bracket plus one will vote themselves the top half of the income bracket's money minus one. And that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then nations can't survive that. Shelby or Jean?
Go ahead, Jean.
Jean, let's get you in the conversation here. She's listening.
No, that's very true. And I think part of going to a place, coming to America, going to Canada, going to Australia, France, wherever, to live from a place that you've been, part of it is, yes, you want to keep your culture and that type of stuff, but, you know, you're not where you were. And so you have to... You need to start also learning the culture you're in, because otherwise, why go there except for the free stuff?
Well, there should be an English requirement. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Shelby. Go ahead, Shelby. I'm sorry.
So, well, a lot of people, like, and I would say, especially the taxi drivers, because, you know, you're always chit-chatting with them, were from places that were being bombed and stuff, and I was like, good gosh, like, good for you to get out. I mean, they weren't all just coming to get free stuff. They were coming to get paid from the crazy places they were living.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, I look where I'm at, and the people I've met from other countries, a lot of them are taking the services. Or they're not even taking the services. They're wasting the services that they're given just to pocket the money. You know, like in Minnesota a few years ago, big issue about Somalians getting paid to go to school, getting their tuition paid for, and I don't know how they changed the laws, but they didn't go to school. They kept the money.
Oh, dear.
And so there's a lot of things going on. I work in healthcare. We needed translators. We'd have translators there. So they had the facility, had to pay for the translator to be there. Family didn't show, didn't cancel, didn't do anything. The hospital or the outpatient facility I was at, that was money they lost because they had to still pay for the translator.
Right.
And this just didn't happen once. It didn't happen twice. We had people that would call, make sure they're coming. Yes, they're coming. Didn't show up. But then they'd call and reschedule and reschedule, and same inconsistency. It's very sad. But I want to talk about the one person. One person can make a difference. And I think now we feel like we can't, but they can. Look at the National School Board Association and the fact that the way it sounds, mainly two people. Now, that's two people. One person had to come up with the idea in talk to the other person, but the way it sounds, two people signed that piece of paper that was sent to Biden or wherever it was sent in the government, and then the attorney general sent out the memo or whatever he sent out. Basically, this paper said that parents were, what were they, domestic terrorists. And so now we're hearing that the actual National School Board Association, people are from there, are apologizing to parents, saying, no, they did not agree with that letter being sent out. And so look what just a couple people can do. But it takes one person's idea and then, boom, how they can carry it out. But also look at the Let's Go Brandon movement. I mean, someone started that. I mean, if you really consider it, it didn't start with that. It started with the FU and then went on. But then it was that reporter that said, oh, let's go Brandon. And that's taken off. And actually, and the other. But even like in New York, when you consider all the cops and firefighters that are protesting the vax mandate, I mean, it started with one person to organize it. And it's like, It was huge. I was watching videos of it yesterday. And so one person can make a difference. It may not start, I mean, it'll start small, may start slow, but it's like if you believe in it, it can take off. You just have to keep plugging away at it and find your like-minded people.
That's what we do here. Let me briefly explain the Let's Go Brandon thing, and then I'll get back to Shelby. But basically they were saying, F you, Biden. In stadiums, college stadiums, and places all across the country. And so it was a huge insult. I mean, the rebellion's already started in this country. We did a show, I think, maybe 3 weeks ago now, you know, from compliance to resistance. And we called it, I think, really accurately, that this is where the tide has turned, that people are sick of this. They don't want an insurrection. They want, you know, we want our country back like it was under Trump. And so what they're saying, you know, that it's just open, you know, it's peaceful, it's loud, it's, you know, they're not taking the streets, they're not doing the pitchforks and torches, but they're in the stadiums, you know, yelling F you Biden, you know, and when thousands and thousands of people are doing that, it makes a big difference. So what happened was apparently there was this NASCAR event. They're also yelling F you Biden, and either by programming in their earpiece or by just mistaken hearing or something, there was the woman who was doing the sports casting for the NASCAR event was talking to some guy named Brandon. I guess he's one of the drivers. And so he says, you know, she's hearing, you know, F you Biden in the background. She says, oh, they're saying, let's go, Brandon. They're all for you. And of course, it became this big joke that F you Biden, you know, if you want to say that in polite company, it becomes let's go, Brandon. And so there was a rap song that's on Rumble right now. And so you can look at it. So just put, you know, let's go, Brandon, rap, you know, and this guy will come up. But he was banned by YouTube, so you got to watch it on Rumble. And it's got this really great rap of, you know, with all kinds of, you know, obscene gestures and everything else. It's a great rap song. But that's what's going on. So if you want to, it's code. It's code for F you Biden. That's where it comes from.
I was told last week that's the number one song.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was banned. What do you expect? If you want to make
but
something number
is,
one, ban it.
I
wish
think
we
that
were
Brandon actually won the race, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not
Oh,
announcer.
Really?
That's good. Yeah, I think he did, but I could be wrong. But yeah, so it's just one person, how it can ignite something. And unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever, you know it's getting under their skin because places are banning it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember yesterday when we talked about Sun Tzu and the art of war, and then, you know, all war is deception, and, you know, the first thing you want to do is irritate your enemy, you know, and so this is what people are doing. They're irritating the enemy. I think it was a fascinating show. It was a lot of material that we tried to cover, and I was, you know, I'll get to probably, you know, more of it later this week, but the whole idea of you know, fighting back, of knowing yourself and knowing your enemy. And so Canadians don't know themselves, so they don't know their enemy. Their enemy is the unassimilated. Their enemy is the lack of Canadianness. Same thing going on here. But I think Americans are rediscovering who we are, and we're rediscovering it through resistance. The people that are not flying the airplanes or driving the trains or going to their law enforcement job or their firefighter station, those are the and you know, or their healthcare facility. That's the resistance right now, and those folks are organized because of unions and the community that they serve in. You know, usually you'll find those police, firefighters, first responders, really tight community. They all know each other, so it's not hard to organize them. You know, when a certain percentage are leaving, they're leaving. But we are rediscovering, I think, what it means to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. And part of that means resisting government tyranny. And the greatest tyranny right now are mandates, because the government they're not constitutional. They have no right to do that to us. The Constitution is supreme over any public health dictate. And that's what makes our country unique. But the resistance is starting, and people are starting to, and the more resistance they see, the more resistance you're going to find. Every stadium that yells, let's go, Brandon, is going to mean another five stadiums are going to yell, let's go, Brandon. I mean, I'm really encouraged by what's going on right now. Anyway, getting back to travel for a second here, because we're going to have Josie join us in just a second here. What's going on with the airlines and the new travel guidelines that are coming out of the, you know, what did I call it? The view from the coup. I had a word for it. I should write it down, you know, or news from the coup. Anyway, but you know,
well,
you
the
know,
biggest
that,
thing
yeah.
I had,
what's happening?
What uh-huh. I had noticed is this new thing on the cruises that they're accepting guests with mixed vaccines. Now,
ooh.
I didn't even know this thing, but apparently now you can. Like I thought, when you got vaccinated, you had to get the same one, like you vaccinate, then they tell us to come back in 2 weeks and you get the other one. But mm-hmm. apparently that was a thing. So now cruise lines are able to go, even if they've had a mixed dosage, such as one dose of AstraZeneca plus one dose of Pfizer or Moderna. So this is just to me a little odd because I wouldn't, first of all, I just don't think that they're the same. Like all the vaccines are a little different. So I'm like, yeah. I don't understand how that would be possibly effective. So for me, from my outlook on it, it's a rule that is a stretch in the right direction, meaning they're like, well, that must be fine, you know, because they just are trying to get as many people on as possible, and they don't really care if they know the science behind it. That sounds okay. So they're starting to bend the rules, which in my opinion is good because, like, they need to be less restrictive because a lot of my people don't want to go on a cruise because they don't want to get vaccinated. So that's we're going. That's kind of what I've been on mostly. And I don't know. I don't know what else. What have you heard about the airlines? And then I have to go as well.
Well, I know the pilots are not flying as much, and so I don't know. They're not reporting on it a whole lot. But as far as mixing vaccines, that's crazy. But I think what's happening is that in the great vaccine wars, Pfizer's winning because Pfizer seems to be the vaccine of choice from the coup. You know, they're pushing it. I don't know if Pfizer. I heard something rumors about. I gotta check it out. But I think they're probably paying more for their lobbyists. They're paying more stuff. But Pfizer's winning. Pfizer's is winning the vaccine wars, and so Moderna is nowhere near as mentioned. Is nowhere near as favorable. Yeah, that company was created specifically to push the messenger RNA, you know, gene therapy. Johnson & Johnson, they're out of favor because they only have one shot. Well, there's more profit from two shots than one shot. That's why I don't think you see Johnson & Johnson around anymore. And they were more of a traditional vaccine. They actually were a vaccine because they had genetic material from COVID that was used to build resistance in your body, as opposed to the mRNA shots, which actually teach your body how to make COVID, and then your body's supposed to learn how to destroy COVID from what you're making. But the problem is the instructions with two shots and a booster are so strong that it overrides your immune system and you end up becoming a COVID factory. And that's why COVID is spreading so fast, you know, amongst the quote vaccinated, because they are the super spreaders. I mean, the vaccine is the super spreader. This is where it gets kind of crazy. Anyway, we got Josie on the line. Let's bring her on in just a second. I got a new feed for her. I got busy last week. But hold on. Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that a way for them to push more vaccines is to now allow them to take one from one like Pfizer and then get Moderna, or with Johnson & Johnson, that they only have the one vaccine. So that means now they're supposed to get two vaccines or three, maybe because they only got the one. So that means they have to get two more.
Mm-hmm. And that way you don't know what's in your body from three vaccines.
More vaccines.
Yeah. Well, and what if they have, you know, incompatible ingredients? You know, that's
right,
the problem.
Right, that would be, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mix mine. That doesn't, I don't know.
We're just hoping you don't get any more. Don't get any more, Shelby.
Right.
Shelby, don't get any more. I don't care what you do, don't get any more. Please.
I'm Shelby the Fabulous.
Oh, do you have to leave us?
Guys.
Okay.
I do.
We'll see you later.
It's so great to be here. Thanks so much. Bye-bye for now.
Thanks, Shelby. All right.
Bye.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossi knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossi.
Good morning, Josie.
Hey, good morning. I got a new phone, and I'm trying to learn how to use this thing. It's terrible.
It's working. Sounds great. No, it's working fine. Yeah, if you ever get a microphone, you want to do the microphone headset thing. I can send you a direct connect to your email, and then you can be like us, you know, sitting at your desk with a microphone and just you know, feel like a real broadcaster. This is fun. Anyway,
maybe.
But your phone's working fine. Yeah. Yeah.
How
What's going
been?
On? I've been fabulous. We've got so many things going on here. It's just very exciting right now at Action Radio. New potential sponsors, and I'll announce the details as soon as I can. The big news, and I probably should have mentioned this, I'm trying to get all of us to go to CPAC 2022, and it's going to be, they say, late winter. I don't think they've established the date and necessarily where it is yet. It was Orlando last year.
Uh-huh.
It's usually in Washington, so we need to make a road trip. We need to all go. And so I'm trying to get as many reporters from all around the country, because we have half our reporters are up around D.C., you know, Claire and Jonathan and Peter are all up there. So I want to get them in, especially if it's a D.C. convention. But, so that's what's going on. Anyway, that's my news.
Well,
what's your news?
To find out when it is.
Oh, believe me, I've already pre-registered. I pre-registered. They're going to give me the details. You just go to CPAC 2022, and you can pre-register, and let's get going. Because, you know, I want to have tables. I want to do the media. I want to be on Media Row. I want to broadcast for the 4 days of CPAC, you know, meet all the elite of the
all
conservative
the
movement. Mm. Time that Sean Hannity sat across from me.
Yeah.
We'll see. I want to talk about Action Radio. Yeah. Hey, listen, we're the future of talk radio. They just don't know it yet.
Well, I heard you guys talking a little earlier about one person makes a difference. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
One person can make a difference in this country to do different things. One person took the Bible out of the schools in this country, you know.
Hmm.
One person can make a difference on so many different ways. And you're absolutely right. A lot of people say, yeah, but what can I do by myself? So,
I'm just
anyway.
One person. Yeah, and that's why I said, well, everybody is just one person. That's not an excuse.
Exactly.
You know, since we're all one person, now we can join with other people. We can form coalitions, alliances. We can form clubs, organizations, groups. But the point, you know, I think it got missed a little bit by folks, but that was my point, is that, you know, saying you're just one person is not an excuse, because we are all just one person. The difference is what we do with it.
Yes.
Anyway,
agree.
Yeah, that's my point.
Anyway, like I was reporting about the migrants coming, the caravans.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar El Blue from Mexico, he's in the middle of the caravan reporting. I was getting news from him, and he said it's about 5,000 in the caravan at this point coming. I know the media was reporting 60,000, but they're not sure if it's going to be 60,000 coming. And this caravan are feisty, let me tell you. They're pushing the police. They're like, if they have rights in Mexico, they're upset. They're complaining that Joe Biden is a loser, that they want Trump because Trump knew what he was doing. And I'm like,
who said this?
Who cares? You're over there.
No.
Yeah.
Why are they saying that? Why are the illegals saying they want Trump? That doesn't make any sense.
They want Trump. They said Joe doesn't know what he's doing because he promised that he's going to let all of them in, and now he says don't come, and, you know, come up through Kamala Harris, of course, you know.
Oh, is this what they call biting the hand that feeds you?
You know, that's what I was calling the Cubans in Miami when the kid got taken from his home, and now he's an older man in Cuba, older kid, you know. But
wow.
I said the Cubans were against America and Miami, and I was so upset about that a while back, you know. But so the migrants, illegals, whatever you want to call them, I call them the illegals. Law
they're
record.
Illegals.
They're destroying all different areas in Mexico. And people are sick and tired of them. And the government is deeply involved in this because, you know, all you have to do is send your army to the border and say, you're not coming in, period.
Mm-hmm.
And they are coming in. So about 5,000 are in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you remember when Colonel Doug McGregor was on? I happened to meet him through a friend. He's the colonel who said that, Trump had his instincts were good to end the wars and get people out, but he was being co-opted by the idiots, you know, that the permanent war class to always be in places that we shouldn't be in. And then, of course, that resulted in the Biden surrender in Afghanistan. But the one thing he said was that the Army knows how to secure borders. You know, that's what they do. Yeah. They secure borders everywhere. They secure borders all over the Middle East. You know, you look at Iraq and different mm-hmm. places that we've been. I mean, I think we're there for the wrong reasons, and the wars never should have happened.
Yeah.
But one thing we're good at, the military is very good at securing borders. That's what they do. They know exactly how to do it. So if we had a real president, if we didn't have a coup, if we didn't have the view from the coup, that's what I call it now when I talk about the Biden insurrection, President Nobody. You know, so when President Nobody makes an illegal mandate, you know, this is what happens. And this just crazy situation, there is no border. And, you know, the government, like I say, is giving itself its own power, its own justification, and all these folks coming in caravans. But the problem is the people that are attracted are not good people. The good people are applying legal.
Yeah.
You know, the caravans are full of criminals, basically. They're criminals for wanting to come here illegally. They're criminals for literally rolling right over the police in Mexico and rolling over Mexicans. They don't care. So they're coming here as criminals, to be criminals, to live as criminals. And they think that, and if Biden doesn't give them everything they want, it's like the DACA people that said, you have to let me in. You know, the woman that followed Senator Sinema into the stall in a women's room. You know, she's a DACA person.
Yeah,
she's an illegal alien. You have to let me in. You have to do this.
She should have been arrested.
Yeah. Let me get a comment for you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. But
well,
anyway,
I got a surprise for you.
good. Don't forget. 50%, they're saying 50% of the caravan right now are children, and a lot of the children don't have parents. A lot of these kids, I don't know what's going
on.
Who's minding the kids?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Who's minding the kids? You know, are the parents just giving up their kids to hope that they'll get here somehow, and then once they're here, magically they'll be taken care of for the rest of their life? That's insane. Yeah.
I don't know, but I think the cartels are kidnapping a lot of these kids because there's a lot of kids coming in that caravan when Oscar was reporting this, and he was saying about it that he cannot believe how many kids. And, you know, he's talking to them in Spanish in the crowd there. And a lot of those kids don't have parents coming in, and it's not good. That is not good at all.
Do they figure they're anchor kids? That if they get the kids across the border, then the parents will be forced. The government will be forced to bring the parents in too. Is that what the logic of this, or what?
Could be.
How do they know who the parent would be?
I know. I think a lot of these kids are kidnapped by the cartels. In all the poor areas, in Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, even from Nicaragua, a lot of kids are missing nowadays. But you know, the other thing too, a lot of those women are pregnant. That's what Oscar was saying.
Yeah, that's
a lot
fraud.
Of these women are pregnant because they're thinking they're gonna come here and deliver the baby here by the time they get here.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that over 30% of the female children are assaulted. That's horrible. After they get there.
Yeah, they do. And the Biden are keeping about 100,000 of them, 120,000. They still have the kids away from the parents. And look at how long it's been. This is horrible. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is the Haitians, there's a lot of Haitians are being deported by Biden's government here. And that's kind of odd because there was a video where you can see them entering Haiti, going back, but they're not deporting the criminal MS-13, so the cartels coming in, but they're deporting the Haitians. Many of the Haitians have been deported right now.
Well, what goes on? We got a big Haitian community in Florida. Now, I know the Cuban community here, Cuban Americans, are staunch patriots, conservative, you know, usually Republican voting, or even more conservative than that. And so, when the Cubans come here, the President Nobody in the insurrection, they don't care because they don't serve the interests of the Democrat Party. Right. Now, Haitians, I don't know the character of the Haitian folks. Are they coming here and becoming independent? Are they more like the Cubans, or are they more like the Somali, you know, alleged refugees who are setting up vote fraud and, you know, Sharia law, little communities up in Minnesota and places like that? What are the Haitians who come here? What are they doing?
My experience with the Haitians in Miami, they're coming to be taken care of. They're not like the Cubans or the Mexicans in the farms. They really want to work. I mean, there's a few that I met that wanted to work, but most of them are under welfare, free housing, Section 8. You know, they're just not as motivated to work as the Cuban people were in Miami when I was in Miami.
See, that's unusual because you get Cubans to come here. They come from tyranny and they want freedom. You know, usually the countries that, I mean, Haiti is a tyranny. I mean, they've had dictators, you know, the Duvalier family, I think, has run Haiti for, I don't know how many generations, Papa Doc, Baby Doc. I don't even know who's in charge now, but it's a similar kind of thing. So, but the people there, are the Haitians, are they, you know, are they mostly dependent on government for everything? You know, in which case, why would they, you know, which case they might be conditioned to that. So in Haiti itself, how... Is it just poor, or are they absolutely? Is it like a communist dictatorship where every thought is regulated, where every action is regulated, or is it just a dictatorship of wealth and power? What's the Haiti dictatorship like?
That's funny you ask, because I was watching a report last night directly from Haiti, and the problem at the moment, since the president was killed, is a chaos in the streets. There's a lot of violence. There's barely any food in Haiti, and they're desperate. People are desperate right now in Haiti, and they're trying to go. And at the same time, George Soros is using them to come to America, paying for everything. So I don't know who are the people that George Soros is choosing with the United Nations. I don't know if they're getting people out of jail to bring them here. The president's wife, she's talking about that she wants to run for president. And, you know, she was supposed to be dead, but she acted like if she was dead, laying in the ground, you know, when her husband was murdered. And they left her alone for dead, but she's still alive. And she's saying that she wants to run for president, for Haiti. Because she wants to continue what her husband started, because he was a good man, actually. And
He didn't vaccinate us. His people move mandates either. I think that's one of the factors that's interesting to consider.
He rejected the vaccine, and he also had a lot of information about the Clintons and the child trafficking in Haiti. And they took him out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
well,
definitely.
I'd be interested to see, you know, hopefully they can solve that case, or if not, then the people who are investigating are probably paid off by the people that did it. And so that's usually how that stuff works. But here's the question, though, too. The Dominican Republic is literally, you know, over the mountains, you know, from Haiti. Are they patrolling their – I would think that Haitians, if they wanted to go anywhere, first of all, refugees should always go to the country that's closest by, and the country that's closest by is the Dominican Republic. So how come the Dominican Republic isn't overrun by Haitians?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. They don't want to go there. They want to come here. And you know, like I said before in this station here, they gave an option to a lot of these caravans last year to go to Spain, to go to Chile, to go to a different area. And they said, no, we're not. We want to go to America. We're not going to go. Even Canada was opening the doors to a lot of them.
Yeah, go up there.
They
leave us alone.
Yeah.
Well, see, isn't that, look at that arrogance. They refuse. They decide where they want to go. Well, it's not up to them to decide. It's up to us to decide. And it, you know, based on the way it used to be, merit. Interesting. I got a surprise for you. I got a caller here.
Ahead.
And I'm just going to bring her on. And Paulette, welcome to Action Radio.
Hola, oh my God, chica. Paulette. Hola, chica. How are you? Oh my God, I didn't expect that.
Well, that's why it's called a surprise.
Right. How are you doing today, chica?
I'm good, sweetie pie. And Paulette, she is such a wonderful baker, a chef, a culinary teacher. She can make the best food and cakes. And
it's funny you should say that. So by total accident, I met Paulette on Facebook by total accident. It's hysterical. And I look at, well, she does this and she does that. Well, she's kind of interesting. So we got to talking. And I found out that you guys are friends. And I thought, well, you might as well come on. So what we're going to be working on with Paulette, you know, is some kind of food, health, alternative, you know, stuff show, like a regular report here. So I want to introduce her now because she's got a couple things to announce. Yeah. I guess you have a video presentation tonight, and she's going to be on tomorrow for an hour. And so I thought it'd be kind of cool.
Oh,
I want to
wow.
make sure you got your report
Good.
In first. You know. Oh, yeah, this is how actually
yeah,
we're going to go. We're all spontaneous.
Yeah,
go ahead, Paulette.
Welcome. Welcome,
yeah.
Paulette.
Oh, gracias. So I was thinking to myself when you guys were talking about the power of one person, I was just thinking about how one person is actually your biggest enemy, and that's yourself.
that's our show title.
We self-suicide. I mean, yeah. I was just thinking about even the power of one day. You know, when I was talking to Greg, he was telling me about how he had, you know, that he does intermittent fasting. And, you know, of course, you know, in the Bible, you know, Jesus always fasted and he, you know, commanded of us to fast. And if you just do a 24-hour fast, it's amazing what it can do for you cognitively. You actually literally can grow new brain stem cells. And I would encourage the president to do some fasting with some ketogenic diet. It would definitely improve his dementia.
Biden needs that.
Which president?
Biden.
Is that a president?
Biden, of course.
The coup? The insurrectionist? Yeah, president nobody?
we got to get Paulette
acclimated to
Paulette, we don't call him president.
No, we don't call him that.
He might be a better, stand-up president if he could work through some of dementia skills.
Dictator?
God bless him. I do feel sorry for him because things like you can't remember where you put your keys or what that person just said 2 seconds ago. So I kind of relate to and understand. And you know, I'm trying to do studying, you know, in my early 50s now about how to improve my cognitive health so I don't go completely, you know, nuts. My cousin actually died at 42 of Alzheimer's.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow, that's young.
You know, apparently when you get Alzheimer's when you're, young in particular, it goes very fast. You know, your brain, it goes a lot faster than, you know, because I think it's the average for like a person over 70 is like 3 to 5 years. Whereas when you're younger, I mean, it goes within a matter of a year or two. It goes very, very rapid.
Wow.
And, I mean, to ultimately where your brain, you know, shuts down. And even, you know, because I have hypothyroid, which, you know, deals with the pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland basically controls everything that goes on in your brain, which tells your body to do everything.
Hmm.
And, you know, I became interested in all of this because, you know, I've been a pastry chef most of my life. And, 20-something years. And I'm
sugar, carbs.
Yes, and so
high fructose corn
lots of
syrup.
sugar is like alcohol. It's like one of the slowest forms of, you know, suicide that you can have. And,
we're thinking
of titling
the show, you know, foods that kill you, or cooking yourself to death.
Yes.
We're going to come up with some outrageous, thing for that. But yeah, but I want to hear more about this fasting and brainstem stuff or brain cells because this is incredible to me. So yeah, I'm actually losing about 5 pounds a week. And I've been just stop eating in the afternoon and drink cold water the rest of the day. And it's working. It's working really well. Josie, where do we meet next? You're in for a bit of a surprise. But how does that improve your brain cells? Oh, who wants to? Paula, did you want to go? How does it improve your brain cells?
Oh, yeah, of course. Fasting. There was actually a study done. It was a Japanese that won a Nobel Peace Prize. And I wish I had like the exact person. And it was in 2000.
Next week,
and
we
he, you know, he actually, they actually found that you can, because they've done studies on the brain and how it affects, and it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating how it improves your cognitive skills. And it actually, if you do, like, if you're a person who's, you know, severely overweight, a 36-hour fast is, it's the benefits of it are incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I can't do the 24-hour one. I'm not going to make 36. I can do like 12. You know, so got to eat in the morning, you know, and just, you know, from the afternoon on, I get really hungry about 10 o'clock.
And it's funny too because it's also a, a spiritual discipline as well. For those who recognize Christ, Christ, of course, fasted for 40 days in the wilderness with no water or food. Ooh. And so it's a spiritual discipline as well. And, one of the spiritual gifts is self-control. And what I find, too, when you train your body, if you could train your body to do that 24-hour, 36-hour fast, you train your body, your stomach starts to decrease, then you don't need as much food. And, you know, I don't know where in the world we ever got this idea that you're supposed to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Americans eat, and then they tell people it's the craziest thing in the world to have little snacks in between. It's literally ludicrous because every single time that you eat, every time you eat, you spike your insulin. Every time you put any calories, 10 calories in your mouth, you spike your insulin. And every time you spike your insulin, it's like a little person running to your cells and opening up that key and opening the door. Well, if you do it too often, eventually your insulin is not going to work the way it's supposed to. That's how people become diabetic. Diabetes is literally an epidemic. So is obesity.
Okay.
And yet you're telling people to eat more. I mean, we have such mixed signals in the society. You know, it's like be skinny, but eat all this stuff.
Paulette, in Miami, I was not too far from a Pizza Hut place, and they had all you can eat, and they had to shut down that restaurant because, let me tell you, they couldn't make the pizzas fast enough because people were eating like hogs. Like, I never seen anything like it in my life. And that's the problem in America, that people eat so much one sitting, and it is sad. When I go to the Ukraine on my mission trips, everybody has a little plate, and they don't have big plates. I took one of the young translators to a restaurant in the city of Kiev, and he was in shock to see a big plate in front of him. He has never, ever in the 26 years of his life, I've seen a big plate in front of him. Never. He was like laughing. What was this? We eat so much in America that our stomach is bigger and bigger and bigger. But you know, Paulette,
right.
Since I haven't seen you too much because I haven't come to the front of the church, but I have lost 17 pounds in the last 3 months with Herbalife.
Congratulations.
Yes.
That's
so
awesome.
My stomach is shrinking, and if I eat too much, you know, I can tell. And I'm like, oh, no, I have to stop. So, yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I want to say to you, praise the Lord, congratulations. That's awesome. But not because you're going to be beautiful, even though that's a natural effect that comes from losing a lot of weight. But I don't think that's the reason you should lose weight. It's so that you can nourish your body, so that you feel good, so that you think better, so that you're able to accomplish more, so that you can be that one person that makes a difference. So I think that's why, you know, it's very important to have health. And it isn't that you should never, ever eat, you know, have some sugar or anything else. It's just that sugar for too many people is an addiction. And when you have people dying of COVID, and the majority of those people are more, you know, obese, then that should be like a huge trigger to us.
I think also what's important, too, you're a good example for people around you, and that's the important thing too. They see that you did it. Now that will encourage them to do it. And I think too, to make people aware, because there's sugar in so many things that sugar doesn't need to be in, but it's a cheap filler or corn syrup or however you want to say it. It's just even like yogurt, mainstream yogurt. Why do people buy it if you look at the amount of sugar in it? That's insane.
I don't like yogurt.
But there is alternatives, but they're not aware. But I look at people and how many people give their kids yogurt and how much sugar is in there. That's all sugar. You could say, no, it's not, but in Canada, they don't have the same amount of sugar. And if you get one that has less sugar, it doesn't taste any worse or any better. So why are people putting that in their body?
Yes.
And you know, Paulette, the twice I've been in Cuba, and I can tell the difference in my body when I'm eating all the natural food over there compared to here. It is amazing how your body feels, including going to the bathroom. It's like, whoa, what happened? You know? And you can see your body's detoxing from the food here. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've come up to, in addition to sugar, we've also added so many other chemicals and so many other unnatural things into our foods. And
like
hormones. I think, you know, it's funny because a lot of people say that that the people that are against these vaccinations are just a bunch of crazy conservative, you know, conspiracists. But you know what? It's funny because a lot of my, you know, left-wing nutcase hippie friends are also against the vaccine because they're smart enough to know that, you know, back when we started messing with the food, with Monsanto, you know, putting the chemicals everything into so many of the products, we began to realize that, wow, the FDA was in bed with these drug companies. And so they're the ones not only making the laws, but they're also the ones regulating the laws and are the ones receiving the funding from the government. I mean, it's literally, you know, and you kind of like it's so obvious that how can they get away with that? And yet they've been, you know, bribing, threatening, you know, politicians for so long, left and right. I mean, that's how they get away with it. That's how we wound up with this vaccination. That's how we wound up with this entire pandemic. You know, because of these drug companies, I mean, that make so much money, that are literally taking over the world. And they're doing it, you know, legally. That's what's so crazy. And they've been able to manipulate people's minds so well because people are so used to it. They're so used to just accepting whatever the medical doctor said. But it was actually back in the 60s that even like psychiatry became recognized as like a legitimate medical doctor. I mean, before the 60s, psychiatrists were considered fringe, but then all of a sudden they were accepted by the medical community as being like normal doctors. And then that's also when the drug companies started coming into the medical schools and helping fund the medical schools and also advertising in the medical journals. That's the drug companies. Now, if that isn't a conflict of interest, what is? And so that's how we wind up with drugs, and it's allowed. And then people who actually do legitimate things, like, for instance, you know, have open-air, you know, farms with killing the chickens, the government comes in and shuts those places down. And that's the most natural thing in the world you can do. That's because they'd rather them all be shoved into a farm and, you know, shoved with a bunch of antibiotics. And, I mean, you know, they've because consumers have become aware of that, you know, and they're pushing back against it, you know, they've had to, you know, kind of push back a little bit, but not enough, not enough.
Hey,
I mean, but
Paulette,
I
have a question.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. We're supposed to be going to the fair tonight to an auction to buy either a full cow or half a cow so they can cut it up and put it in my freezer.
Oh,
is that
awesome.
A good idea?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's awesome. It's great to support those local farmers. I feel so sorry for the Wyoming farmers. They had such a bad drought this year that many of the families in Wyoming, one of my best girlfriends lives in Wyoming, they had to literally sell off all their cattle to, you know, be able to survive. They couldn't afford, you know, to buy the hay, and they didn't have grass because there was no rain.
Oh, wow.
And so some of like their heritage of their cows literally going away as a result of having to sell off all their cows. It's really sad.
Oh, my goodness.
What was happening. But supporting, you know, our beef industry in particular, supporting, you know, local farmers, doing what you're doing is exactly great. That's awesome.
Good.
That's really what we should be doing. And I think eventually that's what we're all going to be doing anyway. We're all going to be having our own farms and, you know, and go fishing. And, I mean, these young people that only know how to push buttons, they're going to be so screwed.
I have another surprise for you. Hold on just a second.
Uh-oh.
This is going to become the Josie's Friends show.
All right. What's
Lita,
my other surprise?
Lita, welcome back to Action Radio.
Lita.
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Hi, Lita.
Josie, how are you?
Good, sweetie pie. You had me in tears the other day when you were on the radio, and I couldn't call back because I was rushing to go to an appointment, but I was listening. But I was in tears when you started crying. I said, oh, my cheek is crying.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. It was rough.
Yes. Thank you for sharing. And your emotions show what a good nurse you are. You sure are a good nurse, Lita.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think what I'm going to do here is make a little command decision. Paulette, I think I need you to on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, right after Josie's report. I think the plus you also have a video Tuesday nights, and it'd be a good time to talk about that too. I'm just listening to especially the three of you and Jean too. So Jean, Josie, Paulette, and Lita here. I think this is going to be an incredible combination of voices on this show. And so I'm just kind of hanging back and listening. But I do have something here. So Lita, feel free to join the Tuesday party on Action Radio, because I think it's going to be fabulous for us. And we'll get more, you know, Josie, if you have any other friends, you know, just let me know. Okay. We'll bring them too.
Many.
Well, it was great. This is kind of fun. Well, see, this is the thing, too, is people don't realize that, maybe I should say this more often. None of us are professional broadcasters. I mean, the closest one is me, but not because I have a degree in communications or broadcasting and have like a, you know, a 30-year career in this. You know, Action Radio, I started off broadcasting Action Radio. There is no degree in that. You can't go to school and take courses in Action Radio. The only source of Action Radio is this. We are it. And we're literally creating it as we go. And so that's why it's so fascinating. So this is why, you know, I'm open to trying things, because the whole basis of the show is trying new things.
Okay.
I've got to come in here for all three of you. And Josie, like, again, if you have anything else to report or Paulette, if you want to introduce a new topic, I already know where your report's going just based on what you've said already. And it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about exactly how, you know, we'll figure a title for it. I'm just going to let you go. Just whatever topic on health or food you want to bring up is going to be great. We have a live chat. And we have a live chat, and we have our own gadfly, Bumpin' Jack 5. And so if you look at your broadcast screen, for those who are, or if you're listening, you know, and calling on a cell phone, you're looking at your screen, you'll see the live chat down below. Anybody can participate in live chat. In fact, I want to get more people doing this as well, because a lot of people either can't call in or think that because they disagree with me, they can't call in. Neither, you know, well, the second one's certainly not true, but if it's easier for you just to type a message, feel free. So you start a free account with Blog Talk Radio, and then you can type in. And Bubba Jack says, why does Greg keep spreading misinformation on vaccines? The vaccine doesn't spread COVID in your body. Well, obviously, Bumma Jack, you're not listening to the show, because we've had, you know, expert after expert that says exactly how it works. We had a rally in Pensacola where we had, you know, three separate doctors talk about how this is a spike protein, how the way it works is the messenger RNA goes to your cells and it creates the spike protein envelope so that your body can fight it. And the problem is there's so many boosters and so much RNA that it creates trillions of cells in your body, and it actually is COVID. The reason that people take, you know, the precautions that used to prevent the spread of COVID, you know, ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, things like that, we did that to protect ourselves from COVID, you know, airborne COVID, COVID spread by other people. Now we take it to protect ourselves from the, quote, vaccinated, the vaccine injured, the DNA damaged. I'm going to use that term from now. I like that, DNA damaged, okay? But that's what we're doing. And so the reason, you know, the fact that you say, you know, misinformation is like code for I don't believe you, I'd rather believe the propaganda. Okay. So whenever I hear the term misinformation, this is what comes to me. All right. I'm just going to say this one little bit, and I'm going to let you all go and sort of, you know, jump on this and give your own point of view. But misinformation is one of those buzzwords. It's like conspiracy theorists. If you want to totally dismiss somebody, see, when you're a conspiracy theorist, well, A, there probably is a conspiracy, and B, until it's proven, yes, it is a theory. But, you know, all science works off theories. You know, science works off evidence to hypothesis, hypothesis to theories, theories to facts. And even the facts are able to be challenged, because in science, everything's able to be challenged, contrary to popular belief of the left. So the idea of saying misinformation, that's simply not true. But I'm not going to provide you with the whole list of my sources, simply because you're not going to believe it anyway. Bumpin' Jack.
Yeah.
People don't. They come with their prejudices. They maintain their prejudices, and nothing you say is going to make any difference.
Lita. His mind is already set, so there's not much you can do for people like that. I'll give you an example. There's a couple in my Sunday school class, and they were so excited about the vaccine and all that. And a couple weeks ago, I noticed he looked sick, the husband.
Ooh.
Well, he's very sick with heart condition right now from the vaccine. My mom's cousin, after 20 minutes of the vaccine, she had a stroke and she's dead. Her daughter, we just buried her with blood clots in her head at the end of June.
Wow.
And my husband's best friend, he had open heart surgery from the vaccine, full of blood clots. So it's another young 29-year-old runner here at Sacred Heart. He was full of blood clots in his heart. We're helping a lot of people. We're guiding a lot of people. And Lita can tell you better because she's a nurse. She witnessed a lot of people, and she has refused to take the vaccine because she knows what the vaccine is all about, like I do, and I'm sure Paulette too. So,
well,
Lita,
healthcare workers, you know, it should be the biggest red flag in the world waving right in front of President Nobody's face and all the other folks that if the healthcare workers who give out the vaccines – with the messenger RNA vaccine injury, you know, the people that are giving that out don't want it themselves. That should tell you something. Lita?
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. There's just not enough. There's just not enough data out there. And they're not even talking about the vaccine injured. And that's what's so concerning is the flux of people that we were getting in that were vaccine injured with strokes who were totally disabled. Their lives were totally changed, and nobody's talking about it. That's what's so scary.
Well, there's your conspiracy. You want to talk about a conspiracy, and this isn't a theory. The fact that there are so many injured people out there are so many stroke victims and paralysis victims, and the heart, as I understand it, if the person is shooting you up with COVID, let's put it that way, if the person shooting you up with COVID hits an artery or a vein. And that gets directly to your heart. That's where the spike proteins are going to go, and that's where the heart swelling comes from. And once the heart's scarred, as I understand it, it does not repair itself. Heart injuries are permanent. The scars are the way the heart protects itself from, I guess, further damage. But the thing is, once you're scarred, you're scarred. Once your heart has been increased in size, that's where I got heart surgery for when I had a mitral valve prolapse, for those of you that want to look that up. But the reason you do that is so your heart doesn't swell up and get damaged. You know, and so this whole idea of young people, this is why so many young people are far more injured and tragically killed from these COVID shots, because young people, and the tragedy is young people are statistically immune from COVID. You never heard of young people getting, you know, radically sick. I mean, sure, they had masks, they had the quarantines and all this stuff, stupid stuff for kids, but there's no reason for it because kids' immunity is so strong that none of this stuff is even necessary, and yet they want to, you know, shoot up 5-year-olds with COVID from these shots. It's really crazy. So, Lita, tell me about heart stuff for a while, and then when I get to Paulette about nutritional avoidances of all this stuff and nutritionist prevention. But am I right on the heart thing of what I heard? You know, that if the spike proteins get into your veins or arteries and go to your heart, that's how your heart gets damaged. Lita? I mean, she's...
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I really don't know because, it's like I said, there's not enough data supporting or where we can really see what kind of research they have done, evidence-based research. So, I mean, at this point, I mean, because there's so many unknowns, it hasn't been researched enough.
Well, that's reason enough not to get it. I'm getting a little background noise from one of your lines, but I want to leave you alive. So if you have noise in your background like that. was that the hotel bell? Jean, was that you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just had
well,
a good background comment.
Noise.
Not so much about the heart, because I don't know what's all involved with that. I know there's definitely issues. But anyway, I was just going to say about the vaccines and people making a decision. A lot of it, because they're not told the truth, is of how many people have had negative side effects. It's like lying by omission because they're not telling the truth. They're not allowing people to make informed decisions based on all the facts that are out there. And you could say that's not true, but it is because before the vaccines were put on the market last year, they were told that they had to report different things and they were going to look at that. That's never been reported, none of it, to the agency that was supposed to be looking at it.
You know, it's funny. I remember when the pandemic first came out, and we all kind of didn't know what was going on. And I remember after years of watching zombie films, I was waiting to see people coming down the street with, like, blood coming out of their eyes, you know. Ooh, you know. And then when, of course, I figured out that, that's not what this is about. Now it's like now I see the zombies are more the way that people think. And they're so blinded, and brilliant people do not reason or question, and that's what blows my mind. I mean, they're literally, it's like they got bit by something, and they can't, they're like, ooh, you know. But, I mean, I will tell you this, Greg, so because you were asking me about, like, preventative. So I'm just going to tell you the best way to prevent a virus if you want to be able to fight that virus is to build up your immune. Well, guess what? One of the best ways to build up your immune is eat fermented food and to have that gut. You know, and guess what the worst enemy of the gut is? Sugar. And so, again, what we were talking about, you know, you would think that they would be pushing this, the government would be pushing this and banning sugar or something, you know, because this is because it's causing obesity. And then obesity is one of the pretty much guaranteed factors of, you know, but not necessarily, but I mean, but the majority of people, I mean, that's pretty much a fact, either have low levels of vitamin D or they are obese. And one of the ways you can build up your gut immunity, and that's one of the things I've seen, is the microbiome of the, you know, the patients, the COVID patients are really bad. The microbiome is how your body's supposed to fight. Again, going back to the whole insulin thing and how your cells, you know, fight viruses and things like that, how your brain tells it. Well, you know, if you spike your insulin too much, you're less likely to be able to fight those viruses because you're going to have a bad microbiome. But
so I got a question.
Listen,
so
I got to tell you, I can't discuss a whole lot longer. I just wanted to kind of warn you. I'm going to have to cut off pretty soon, but
well,
we can
fine.
Talk more about it if you want me to come back
we
on next
talk
week
tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
We'll go right to next week.
Oh, but
you know,
listen, I'll be ready for it tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you about that, about insulin, about lectins, about probiotics, and a bunch of other things. We can start with prevention. That'd be a great place for us to go. So give yourself a shameless plug. Let's hear about your
okay,
video presentation
absolutely.
Tonight.
So,
and, yeah.
Thank you so much. So for those who don't know me, Chef Paulette Martin, I am the owner of Nugo Pastries and Catering for 21 years. I started a new online cooking show last year called Naughty Tonight, where I take your most naughty recipe, naughty being one that is harmful to your health, and I convert it to make it nice. And I have a online cooking show on YouTube, and I also have a live stream on Twitch. I will be there this evening at 7 p.m. Central, www.twitch.com/naughty2nice. And I'd love to see you. I'd love to hear your comments if you want to call in tonight, and I'll be preparing some healthy, nice recipes and doing a little bit of a theme tonight, some talking about some scary food and making some things nice. So I'd love to see anybody, and I appreciate you so much for having me on today and actually having me on tomorrow as well. I'm really excited to be a part of this group. Josie is my buddy, and
yes.
I love to talk about these subjects that really matter to me.
Yes.
Well, good. We're going to try to have
it. Paulette's very healthy looking. She lifts weight and she does everything. Strong.
Well, I'm thinking we should get some of our local reporters, you know, especially Josie and me, we should actually go down to one of your cooking events sometime. And,
should go to tonight. She has a feast at home.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We're not going to give away locations yet, but to just, you know, and select it. But, you know, we got to protect our people here. But, yeah, so welcome to Action Radio, Paulette. You're going to be just a huge, you know, part of the show that makes it great. So we'll figure out time for you. I think Tuesdays would be good, but, you know, because I like the, you know, because Josie's here and Jean's here and Alita's going to call in. Of course, you're always welcome to call in on Tuesdays. Even if we have another time for you, you're always welcome to join this group because this Tuesdays are kind of fun around here. In fact, every day is fun around here, but they're all different. Every day is completely different. All right, so let's talk to you tomorrow, and we'll go into whatever subject. Like I said, I like this one. The preventives, you know, would be a great place for us to start, and then we'll figure out a title, and we'll just kind of go from there. Yeah. Thanks, Paulette.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all, and I hope y'all have a wonderful day, and that you're very nice.
Well, that's good. Thank you. Appreciate
that. Thank you for sharing.
So.
Okay. Good night, guys.
Bye. So this is how it happens. I mean, this is a totally spontaneous show. And just, you know, we got to chatting yesterday. I said, you got to come on my show.
We're at Action Radio. What do you expect? We take action right on the spot.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. You know, I find someone who's, you know, who's got, she's got such a great speaking voice and she's very articulate and incredibly intelligent. And it's like, that's what I need.
She's in front of her camera all the time. So, yeah, she's used to. Hey, Greg, I wanted to mention, I was watching a video last night from Dr. Artis, the one we met at the Wahoo. And he was saying in this video that 1% of the people in the world have died from COVID. 1%.
But the higher percent that's killing all these people is in the hospital from the remdesivir. They're choking their kidneys, their lungs full of water, and it's very sad what we're doing to our innocent people in the hospital. So he's please urging people, do not go to the hospital, doctor, saying that.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that. Go ahead, finish.
Quickly, doctors at Sacred Heart right now that they have offices inside the hospitals. My girlfriend was there a few days ago, Friday, visiting her doctor, and he was in tears with my girlfriend, Adriana, because he was kind of like literally saying goodbye because Sacred Heart told him if he doesn't get vaccinated, they're going to shut down his office that he's been there for over 20 years. So he's refusing the vaccine as a doctor because he know that it was going to be harm to his body. And a lot of doctors are going to be shut down as of the 15th of November at Sacred Heart. Very sad.
It's very sad, but I also think this is going to be temporary. I think that they can't do without these people. I think this is going to blow over. I think the more people that resist, you know, these mandates are going to be either laughed at or ignored, and companies are going to find that it's much more in their interest to not push these ridiculous mandates from President Nobody in the coup, and then it's going to be to actually try to enforce them. Because as the coup gets progressively less popular and we start yelling, you know, F you Biden, you know, in code, you know, let's go Brandon, they're going to realize that they're on the wrong side of this.
Yeah.
And as the resistance takes over from the compliance, you're going to see a lot of things change. Anyway, I'm going to play a couple of bits of stuff. We've got Josie, Lita, and Gina, our producer, of course. So take a couple minutes, and wherever you want to go next,
go ahead.
I'm going to leave it open to you folks to see where we go from here. But play a couple of things to let people know what we do, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom. No liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Pankless Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Pankless. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Dangerously cool. All right, we're back with our panel of experts. We have Lita, Jean, and Josie. And so anybody that wants to leap in with a topic, we've got about half an hour left. Feel free. Where should we go at this point?
It's up
small.
To you.
Oh, it's up to me? Okay. Well,
yeah.
I found something interesting. Yes, true. Well, I always have something to talk about. I like to give you guys the option just because. I found something rather interesting. I haven't really read this article all the way through yet. It just happened before the show, but I want to talk about this, the supply chain. Everybody's blaming, you know, the Biden insurrection, President Nobody is blaming, you know, COVID, you know, and it's like, well, people are too scared to go to work. No, they're not. They're too scared of work. That's what the problem is. But we've got all these ships that are out there in Los Angeles. And you think, well, what's going on in Los Angeles? Why would they be out there? You know, why aren't they here? And then, of course, Governor DeSantis says, well, you know, Florida's open for business. We're open 24/7. You know, bring your ships here. And I'm thinking, well, you got a problem. Most of our cheap, you know, stuff that should be made here is being made in China. Well, China's on the West Coast, you know, and those ships are too big to go through the Panama Canal. So it's not like they can just come here. You know, they can't just, they don't have a pass through. I think they're trying to make a new canal, but that's a big deal to send those ships, what, the long way around South America to come up to Florida. Ain't going to happen, you know? And so what's you have a comment on that? Anybody want to start there? And then I'll get more stuff on this whole supply chain thing.
It's funny that you brought that up because that was what we talked about in Bible school, how they hold back things and kind of like a punishment. It is a punishment, actually. And it's basically a test to see who gives in to getting the vaccine or whatever. Because some places, I guess, you know, like they're trying to do with the business, restaurants or what have you, controlling if you're not vaccinated or you can't work here if you're not vaccinated. So it's kind of what, as we Christians, us believers know, is the beginning. we don't necessarily think it's the mark of the beast, but it's a test. Basically, just like when Obama was testing the American people to take away them guns, it's the same thing. We resisted. And so that's what we were talking about. And who's going to persevere through these trials and tribulations? Because pretty soon, it's getting to the point where you can't buy commodities without these things. In fact, I think other countries are doing that already. What? Italy, or I don't know.
So what does the Bible say about resistance to tyranny? Josie can answer this too, if you want to get in on it. I'm curious. Lita?
Oh, sorry. I had you on mute.
Oh, well, don't do that. this is a talk show, not a mute show. I'm just kidding.
I'm not sure. Well, we just have to fully trust in God for our food. Like the little birds, they trust in God. They fly from one place to the other, and they're always going to have food. They're always going to have plenty. And what I see right now, a lot of people are panicking. Like, I'll give you one example. My husband is a friend of a sheriff in town here.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I made the calculation, and I cannot afford to be without this job, making this kind of money that I'm making, he goes, to provide for my family. And my husband goes, but if you take the shot, you might not be here to provide at all. At least you can get another job. Anyway, so we came to Hickory Hammock two Sundays ago to visit. And he approached us and he goes, I got the first shot. And I was like, I don't believe this guy. I don't believe it. He did this. He's not going to be around to provide for his family. It is horrible, horrible, horrible that a lot of Americans are so trained with money, money, money. Money is what's driving their life, and they're going to drive their life to death. Well, I don't have any choice but to take the vaccine. But the Bible, it's very clear. He said you have to ask God, and you know, he will provide for you. He will provide for you. And you don't have to have all the luxuries, all the fancy cars. Do whatever it takes to provide for your family, but in a humble way. And that's not the American way. So a lot of people are going to lose their life. And probably more than 50 million people will die alone in America. Dr. Artis was talking about the 1% has killed with COVID the whole entire world. And there's more death in America because of the remdesivir that they put in your loved ones in the hospitals. And most of the people dying, it's not really from COVID. It's from the remdesivir that they're killing you in the hospitals. And once you go in the hospital, you don't have any choice. The family cannot come near you. You cannot ask for this. You cannot ask for that. They're in control. They said the protocol is the remdesivir. And now they're giving you these other two meds to kill you even faster.
Yeah.
And now with a booster for the vaccinated people, they want to make sure you're 6 feet under. And we talked about it before, $2,300 cash bonus the hospitals are getting for every dosage of remdesivir that they're giving each person. Of course they want all this money. It's all about the money. And it is horrible, horrible, horrible. And China is really buying us because China is pumping a lot of this money too. So China doesn't have to pull a trigger with a gun. He's buying all these hospitals, all these facilities. A bank where my executive in Miami friend works, the banks are rejecting his exemption, religious exemption letter. So he already hired a lawyer. So it is crazy. And right now I'm helping this young man from Africa that he's here on a scholarship, okay? And they're threatening that he's going to lose his scholarship if he doesn't get his vaccine. And he doesn't want the vaccine. And he asked to be transferred to do his clinicals at West Florida instead of Sacred Heart. But the teachers are insisting that he must do it at Sacred Heart. So it's all a chaos in the United States. And
it's a cult. It's become like a religious cult, you know, and the vaccine is the modern day Jim Jones Kool-Aid. Now, I don't know how many people are going to get killed. I don't think anybody knows at this point. 50 million seems like a huge number. I'm just looking at the amount of people who have had their COVID shot. They've been shot up with COVID. And it's in the millions. It's in the hundreds of millions. So I don't know what percentage of the population has. But we don't have, you know, even tens of millions killed, which would be obviously a horrible tragedy. So how bad this is, we don't know. How bad this is long term, we don't know. We can speculate, but I want to make sure that people know that we're speculating. I got some comments. I was just checking live chat too a minute ago. Bumpa Jack says that, you know, the spike proteins don't break off, which, of course, we know they do. That, you know, messenger RNA doesn't affect your DNA, which is insane because the whole point of messenger RNA is to instruct your DNA how to replicate. You know, so that's false. So there's all kinds. So when you talk about the first place you want to look for false information is someone who's accusing you of you know, false information. And that's usually where you're going to find it. But this is a cult. This is people who it's almost like if they get sick, they want you to get sick because now you'll all be equally miserable. You'll all be the same. You know, it's the group thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the individual doesn't matter. We all have to do it as a group. We all have to think as a group. This is why group mentality is so dangerous. You know, if you ever see the movie The Fountainhead, it's about the Ayn Rand book by the same title, The Fountainhead. It's fascinating. Gary Cooper gives a couple of amazing speeches in the film about individuality and the rights of the individual and work. And you're entitled to the profits of your, you know, the fruits of your labor, the profit of your work. It's your work. Your name goes on it. You are the creator of your work, and everything is based on the individual. Everything that happens because one person changes something. I mean, that's how the world, you know, works. But the groupthink, the mentality that...
But you know, Greg...
Everybody has to get
this.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Right. The good thing about this person making all these comments is at least he's listening, and at least he's probably on his own going to be researching all this. Because you know what?
Mm-hmm.
How many people can be saying the same thing? We're not all a bunch of liars, you know. And I hope he goes and research and go to Dr. Simone Gold, frontline doctors. Dr. Estella, she's in the frontline doctors. 2 out of 300 patients at the beginning last year when she saw not one person die from COVID. And not one person should be dying from COVID unless that person is obese, unless that person has heart disease, kidney failure, emphysema, or something like that. But a healthy person should not die from COVID, period.
Yeah.
And I only had the COVID for 5 days. I did the hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc. 5 days later, I was back dancing Zumba, and I'm 63 years old. I'll be 64 this year. And my husband and I'm glad we both had it at the same time, and we both were homesick. A lot of acid drinks like lime and fresh ginger, honey, because we're beekeepers. We have plenty of honey. And let me tell you, it works. It works. The hydrochloroquine really works. We were like brand new 5 days later.
Yeah.
It really works. And we have helped so many, guiding them to do the same thing. Yeah, stay away from the hospital.
Too, I wanted to add to answer your question too, and that's great too, Josie, because I did that with my family too when it first started with the fresh citrus like lemonade and honey and everything. That's a good like a tonic too. You can make your own tonic naturally. Going back to what Greg said, what can we do, or what are the things that the Bible says? Well, in the Bible it says to stay out of debt, first of all. It says it all over, especially in the Book of Wisdom in Proverbs. It says to stay out of debt, basically. And then Jesus warned us because the disciples asked him, how will we know when the sign, you know, when will we know? And she said, just like Josie said, God's not going to allow you to, he said, don't worry. He says, don't worry about the things, the clothes you wear, or the food, what you're going to eat. These are what the non-believers worry about.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, your life is more valuable than a sparrow. He knows even the sparrows that fall and die. He says, there's going to be wars and talk of wars. There's going to be earthquakes, and these are just birthing pains. And he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night, but he says, all the nations will know who I am, and you must go and preach to all the nations. And when all the nations are known of who he is, well, it's any time. He's going to come like a thief in the night. Cries of the children, the cries of the children being persecuted and used as for these satanic things. He sees and he hears those cries, especially widows and orphans.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's in history, in the Bible. God comes back with a vengeance. You don't mess around with that stuff. He will only take so much, and he will come back with a vengeance. And so we don't know when it's going to happen, but we do know because Jesus tells us, he gives us, you know, like
to be ready,
ready, always be ready and persevere.
Yeah.
And it even talks in Revelation that they will have a mark. They will have a mark on them of the beast.
and it's going to be on their forehead or on their hand or whatever, mm-hmm. and they will not be able to buy commodities and things like that unless they have this certain mark.
Unless you have this mark.
Mm-hmm. It says everyone will be forced, everyone, small, great, rich, poor, free, slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or their forehead so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark. So that's in Revelation 13.
Look at in New York City. You cannot go to a restaurant, certain restaurant, if you don't have the vaccine, if you don't show your card that you've been vaccinated. It is out of control.
So,
and a lot of children are being vaccinated in order to go to school. If not, they cannot go to school. But you know what you just said? Jesus will come like a thief in the night. The reason the Bible says that, like a thief in the night, for those that do not know him. But for us, he will not be like a thief in the night because we know him. So oh my God, he came and went, you know. So anyway.
And so this to me, talking in our Bible study, this to us is just preparation. They're testing us, just like these.
So
because
they?
Really, there's
so
no
let's,
law.
Let's bring it back to does the government, do you see the government as trying to be a religion, to trying to be their own gods, that this you know, the vaccine is like communion to Catholics, you know? I mean, that's probably not a good example. I'm not trying to offend the Catholics, but what I'm saying is it's part of the ritual, it's part of the requirement that if you want to be a fully participating Catholic, you take communion. So in the same way here, now they're saying if you want to be a full participant in society, we have determined that you need to take this this COVID shot. And so it's fascinating mm-hmm. that it comes about at this time. You know, it's rather interesting that you have the cross directions of both a coup. It's our first coup. It's our first, you know, stealing of the White House. It's, you know, and it's the first time that government actually appointed government to run government. You know, this is a government insurrection of our country here, at the same time as that same government, a different branch of it, you know, the big health or the government health departments have also brought this, reaction to a virus that's just a regular virus that they, you know, that through, Dr. Fascist, you know, gain of function, took a regular virus in nature and made it a lot more deadly, a lot more infective. And it's still not that bad. You know, over 99% of the people get over it, you know, and most of those get over it rather easily. So they've created a cult of fear, a religion where you have to worship at the altar of big pharma for your salvation, which is the COVID shot. I don't see any difference between this and a cult religion, the way they've structured it and set it up. And through fear of not eternal damnation, but just fear of dying and dropping dead, they're going to take something that very well could make them die and drop dead, right there, or later, or a day later, or a week later,
fear.
Or a month later, or a year later.
Yeah.
But fear.
And they keep instilling the fear in the propaganda, mm-hmm. in the news. And even when I was in the hospitals, that mm-hmm. was the very thing I had to address, was the fear, the spirit of that fear that was still in them, even though mm-hmm. they were getting better. Their lungs were clear. They were well. They were on their way to recovery, post-COVID patients. And that was the part that I felt I had to move in and intercede and help them overcome that spirit of fear. Yes, fear is controlling, and it's not of God. I don't know.
Let me ask you another question.
When you listen to this.
When patients go to hospitals, this is something I talked about when I went to heart surgery. It was a fascinating experience, the whole thing. I had a chat with the head nurse afterwards, and I talked about things with her. I said, you do surveys for pain. I said, the only thing you ask is pain. So that's your only measure of success, is how much pain there is. And so your job is to eliminate pain. Well, the way you eliminate pain is with, you know, opioid overdoses. I know, because they tried to give everybody opioid overdoses as far as I'm concerned. I gave back, you know, half and then three quarters of the pain medication they gave me for heart surgery. And trust me, folks, heart surgery hurts, okay? When they say it feels like you get hit by a Mack truck, that's exactly what it's like. You know, I don't know what's more invasive than, you know, poking around inside your heart and trimming this and fixing that, and you know, but the point is that it's incredibly painful. But you know, it doesn't take a lot of opioids to reduce the pain to a point where you know it's there. And I talked to the head nurse. I said, look, I want enough pain to know that I shouldn't move that direction or do something to hurt myself, but not so much that it's crippling because there's no reason to suffer that much, especially when we have these medications. But it was a lot less than they wanted to give me. And the point of this, when I talked to her, I said, why do you only measure pain? Why don't you measure attitude? Why don't you measure motivation? You know, why don't you measure, you know, what makes me successful, what got me out of bed right away is I wanted to go flirt with the nurses at the table. You know, I mean, call me crazy. I'm a guy. All right. But that was motivating force. I said, how come you don't, you know, I mean, there's so many things that you're not taking into account. Okay. You know, I got up to exercise because I wanted to. I was up that day. I mean, who has open heart surgery? And within an afternoon, I walked maybe 20 feet. Trust me, after the surgery that day, it's quite an accomplishment. But the point is that there was motivation. There was, you know, I wanted to get over this. And I said, I want to go talk to people. I'm sick of being in this room by myself, you know. And so, but they don't take that into account. So my long-winded question for Lita is, you know, all they do is talk about pain and they're sort of limited in what they research. And why don't they do mental counseling as well as physical? Why don't they check the patient's attitudes? Why don't they get rid of their fears so that you're not discharged with a bunch of fears where you go racing to, you know, your panacea, your salvation, your communion with you know, Reverend Fauci, you know, so why don't they do, why isn't that included in the treatment?
Greg. And that's something perhaps these doctors and nurses that are leaving these hospitals, when they open up their own clinics, they can also integrate in their care, because we have to follow what the policies and procedures of the companies or the hospitals or what have you practices. Mm-hmm. And that is a wonderful, wonderful idea, because I incorporate that just myself, because sometimes when I have the time and I'm not running all over in short staff, there was a patient. In fact, I was just praying for her this morning. I remember her sad, sad, sad eyes. She was stroke and I want to say vaccine. She was one of the vaccine injured, and just sad, sad eyes. And I asked her, her daughter shared with me that her motivation was that her granddaughter. So I would bring up her granddaughter. I said, you got to get better. You know, you've got to participate with rehab. You want to get out of here, right? You want to see your granddaughter again. And so she would agree. And then she would participate because she was so depressed. And that's one of the things with stroke patients is we have to check for suicide, depression, and things like that. And so that's what gave her motivation, was her granddaughter, the hope of seeing her granddaughter again and things like that. So those are, yes, you're definitely, I'm in agreement with that. But perhaps with all these other doctors and nurses leaving, they could start their own clinics. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity. They're looking at it in a negative way. This is an opportunity for them to open up their own practice and be open and integrate those things. They can.
Well, I think that's going to happen. I think that, and that's purely American, is that we don't get, we don't sit there and suffer and complain and protest. We actually, you know, try something different. And so I think you're going to see, you know, mandate-free medicine. You know, and that'd be a great company name. You know, or mandate-free healthcare, or you know, doctors running the profession. See, it's like back when the airlines used to run. I mean, the airlines were run by pilots. You know, I mean, Frank Borman ran Eastern. He was a pilot and an astronaut. You know, so he ran Eastern like a pilot would. You know, because he knew the business. There were the, you know, car companies. You know, Ford was run by Henry Ford, who was an automotive engineer. You know, so back when the people who did the work, you know, actually know the business, but then you got the bean counters, and we live in a world of bean counters and actuarials and, you know, liability and insurance and lawyers and people that they know accounting, but they don't know the business. You know, it's like when Paulette was on, you know, do you think that an accountant could run her food business? Well, he said, well, if we deduct the, you know, a certain amount of these rich ingredients here and we use fillers and some extra stuff here, you know, you can save 30% in your food costs. So, yeah, and lose, you know, 50% of the customers because it's going to taste like crap, you know. So it really, in the same way that doctors should be running healthcare the way they want. I mean, the whole idea of a healthcare corporation run by bean counters, insurance people, and lawyers, makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, they'll cover the liability and the bottom line, I'm sure, will look good, but they're not actually delivering health care. They're maximizing their profits, and they sort of lose sight. And you can still do that. You can make a good profit in healthcare. I'm not against profits, obviously. You know, I mean, I'm all for free markets, but the problem is how you do it, or the question is how you do it. And do you do it in a way that actually represents healthcare run by doctors, you know, who can learn business stuff, as opposed to business people who try to tell doctors how to do their job? I think that's one of the biggest problems in healthcare right now. What do you think?
Yes, and I love that you had the other speaker talking about food, because that's another thing I try to incorporate.
Yeah.
Yes, I try to incorporate that with my patients.
Isn't food medicine?
Yes, I use food as medicine, yes. And instead of taking a pill, try changing your diet. Hello, what are you putting inside your body? And so that's what I try to educate my patients too, about the importance of food. So, you know, this is perhaps something new that we could go back to the basics. You know, this, we don't have to pop a pill every time we're sick or, oh, no, you need to change your diet. Look at your lifestyle. Look at your habits.
Yeah, pop a garlic clove. You probably do a lot better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Pop some yogurt. So, you know, get the probiotics going. Get some good bacteria in
you.
Great
opportunity, Josie. And it's, you know, encourage your friends that are in tears or crying and grieving over their jobs. This is a great opportunity for them to start their own practice. And
you might want to do
great
it.
New thing.
Lady, you might want to do it.
I have I think they're already started here.
Okay.
I have a feeling, like you guys were saying, a lot of doctors are going to be doing their own thing. And I heard from a lot of nurses already, like this last week, how bad Sacred Heart is being sued right now. Very bad. From a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses. Oh, yeah. They're in trouble right now, Sacred Heart.
Yeah. Well, and the question is, do you fight? Or do you try an alternative, you know? And so me, I was the martial arts philosophy, be the river, not the rock. So right now, if you're fighting, if you're screaming and yelling, if you're demanding exemptions and they're saying your exemptions don't count, you're going back and forth. But the smarter way is to take away their fight, away their ability to fight against you. And the way you take that away is you form a different business. You know, this is still America.
Exactly.
You can still start corporations. And I guarantee you that millions of people would flock to, you know, mandate-free healthcare. And anybody wants to take that name, you know, courtesy of Action Radio, you know, there's this morning's gift. But I would go if I had, you know, the doctors that I want to see, the nurses that I want to see, the health professionals, all the different folks that I want to see. They're the ones who are the independent ones. They're the ones who are thinking. I don't want some robot healthcare person that took a vaccine because they were told to. No, I want the independent.
You can save a lot of money by going to a private doctor, you know.
I would hope so, but you know, why don't then they start medical credit unions, okay? So you start a medical credit union, you have medical accounts, and instead of having, you know, massive Medicare and things like that, they have vouchers for healthcare, which you put in your medical account, and you purchase your own insurance, and we create a whole new system. That's how we need. So it's the innovation that will remove the battle. Josie?
The government needs to stay away from our healthcare. Period. Mm-hmm. In our public school, they need to stay out of it completely. You know.
Well, it's interesting.
Let us
those
run
two.
Our own show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both health and education are banned by the 10th Amendment from the federal government having anything to do with. They cannot touch healthcare. They cannot touch education. There's a lot of things they can't touch. But there's a lot of things in the Constitution that specifically prohibits the federal government from having anything to do with. And those are the two big ones: education and healthcare. And yet, where do they go? Education and healthcare. Why? Because it's in the Communist Manifesto. You got to stop governing from the Communist Manifesto. That would be a huge help right there.
You know, Greg, in Nicaragua, the communist healthcare is so horrible. Same thing in Cuba. Cuba is the worst. But in Nicaragua, you can go see private doctor, but you have to pay out of pocket. You know,
and how do you get the money to do that in a communist country? Yeah,
it's hard. It's hard for you to go to a private doctor, but they do have them. But in Cuba, there's no such a thing as a private doctor. It's all government health care, communist. The doctors don't have no say-so in Cuba. It's all free college, but when you graduate as a doctor,
you have to work for the government. You don't have no choice to open your own private practice, and you get $60 to $80 a month as a doctor. So many of the doctors are doing part-time taxi driving in order to survive in Cuba. So it's crazy.
Yeah. That is crazy, you know, because you only have the people doing what they do best, which is their profession, you know, and I've worked jobs while I'm getting Action Radio going, you know, as I'm getting sponsors and things. But I mean, I understand that's the price of creating something new. So I don't mind that. And the doctors, you know, the doctors that start their own practice might have to, you know, do different things. They might have to work part-time in a hospital as and then part-time in their practice as they're building it up. That's just normal free market stuff. But I would highly, highly encourage medical professionals to leave, you know, so you're not, so the job that you're losing, evaluate, and we don't have much time, we only have about a minute left, but evaluate the job, you know, and see what you're really losing. You're losing a corporation that couldn't care less whether you live or die. You're losing a job that has been run by bean counters and lawyers who are more worried about liability than they are your ability to save lives. You're working for a corporation that is sucking up to the CDC, Dr. Fascist, the genocidal vaccine drug, psychopathic genocidal vaccine drug pusher. Sorry, Josie. She's always laughing. But, you know, you're sucking up to that guy. That's the guy who's issuing, quote, guidelines, which aren't guidelines, I mean, which are just suggestions. That's the person you're taking your advice from, who pushes remdesivir, which kills, what, 30% of the people with kidney failure. He's pushing, he's banned the cures, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which the total treatment for COVID is, what, $20? You know, that's the person you're listening to. I don't want to work for that person. I don't want to work for that government, corporate, hospital, healthcare system. I want to go to the person, you know, and as me speaking for me, I want to go to the person that says the same thing. I don't value this job. This job does not value me. Why should I value this job? That's what I think the health professionals have to ask themselves.
Yeah. Can I say one more thing, Greg?
Quickly, we're off the air. So real fast.
Matthew 24 in the Bible. Read it. It tells what Jesus explains when the end times and the signs of the end of the age.
Okay. On that note, it's the end of the show. So thank you both. Thank you everybody to participate today. Our new person,
God
Paulette.
Bless you all.
God bless you all too. And this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning, slow down, Greg. Back tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, 5 Mountain, and 4 Pacific time.